State of Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners will now come to order on March 6, 2024. It is 9:00 A.M. Ms. VanderVeen, may I have a roll call of all board members present, please?
Yes, sir. Ms. Angela Powell?
Present.
Dr. Kevin Lee?
Present.
Dr. George Camacho?
Present.
Mr. Mitchell Ferguson?
Present.
Dr. Wayne Bennett?
Present. Okay, there are five board members present. This constitutes a quorum for today's meeting. We will now take the opportunity to state any conflicts of interest for which any of the board members may be recusing themselves on today's agenda. If you do have a conflict of interest, please state the tab number and the reason for your recusal. If you have no conflict of interest, then state the fact as such. We'll start with Ms. Powell.
No conflict.
Good. Dr. Camacho?
No conflict.
Okay, Dr. Lees?
Chairman, tab five for professional relationships.
Thank you. Thank you.
Can I just bring to your attention, I believe Dr. Richardson, as part of his agreement, will be working at The Joint.
Okay.
I don't know that you were aware of that, but-
I was not aware of that.
Is seeking employment there.
Tab number one.
Very well. Okay, thank you. And, Dr. Camacho, you had mentioned something about-
Oh, that's right. I am recusing myself on the Watson.
Okay.
Is it on here still, or?
Yes.
It is. It's tab number seven.
Yeah, that would-
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. And I have no conflict of interest to declare. All right.
Mr.
Mr. Turbinson, sorry, you're not present. I didn't see you. Do you have any conflicts to declare?
No.
Okay, thank you very much. My name is Dr. Wayne Bennett. I'm a licensed chiropractor in the state of Arizona and the board's chairman. I'd like to welcome our newly licensed chiropractic licensees to the board meeting. Thank you for attending. I hope you find this meeting helpful and informative. You are required to attend for a full 3 hours, and you will be dismissed by staff at the 3-hour mark. At this time, I'd like to remind everyone to please make sure your cell phone is on silent or turned off. If you're appearing virtually via Zoom, please mute your microphone until your matter is called. For your convenience, those of you present, throughout the meeting, vending machines are right outside by Boardroom C, and the restrooms are across from the elevator. This is an open meeting. It is being recorded. The audio from the meeting will be posted on the board's website. Please be sure, if you are speaking on the record, to state your full name and speak slowly and clearly into the microphone. In order to protect the complainant's privacy, please refer to the complainant or patient during the meeting by initials only. We will be taking one agenda item out of order due to receiving a request from the doctor's legal counsel to do so, since they will be on in trial. We will begin with agenda item G, tab number seven, the review, discussion, and possible action for case number 2021-032, Dr. Robert Watson, which was previously before the board. Dr. Watson, are you present today?
Dr. Bennett, Dr. Watson's not attending. This is Bruce Crawford attending on his behalf. Thank you.
Yes, welcome, Mr. Crawford.
Thank you.
And yeah, you've already introduced yourself, so we're good. Ms. VanderVeen, can we get a board brief on this matter, please?
Yes, sir. In your materials, you have a memo from board staff, and if you'll recall, at the last meeting, that back in December, we issued an additional subpoena for a patient list. And board staff would just like clarification in regards to the term new patients. Do you mean new patients or recent patients? So I think we were just wondering, in terms of, we kind of wanted to see a scope of the record. Did you only want truly new patients, where we'd have maybe one or two visits, or did we want recent patients, where we have a little bit more history, to look at in terms of the evolution of the note?
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. And Mr. Crawford, the board members have reviewed the memo to clarify the motion that was made on December 6, 2023. If you like, you have up to 5 minutes to make a statement relative to this matter.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Dr. Bennett, and thank you for taking me out of order. I really appreciate the courtesy.
You're most welcome.
So I did send Ryan a an email on February 29. I don't know if you've seen that or not, but I specifically went back and I didn't understand why we were doing this. I'm not critical of board staff. I just didn't understand the context. So I went back and re-listened to the audio recording, and it was pretty clear that the board said that we just want the new patient records, and there was a quote, so we can see what's being done now. And so we kind of had gone around in a big circle in this case, and it had culminated in the board rescinding the prior action and saying, you know, let's regroup. We want to reissue the subpoena, but it was pretty clear that it was just to be for new patient records. So I'm just here to reiterate that point. And I think that's what I think that's where we were at. So I didn't understand the issue, quite frankly.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford. And your recounting is consistent with my recollection of the event. And if I may summarize and then get comments from board members, I believe that what we wanted to do was give the doctor the opportunity. The statement was made that record keeping had there been some improvement involved, but we didn't really have evidence of that. And so the idea was, and I think that maybe we had may have been too general. You know, we wanted to see newer records. Well, does that mean new patient records? Or does that mean records in general that were new? Newish, and so then clarification is being requested about what we meant. Is that basically it? So, and I think everybody here was present at that time. You've had the opportunity to review the matter. So, board members, any sense of what you would like? We want to get a temperature of where the records are at you know, contemporary records. So, what are your thoughts, Dr. Please?
My question now is, because we're talking about a subpoena that was done in December for new patients, those patients now have been in clinic for 3 months. So if we kept the new patients around December, I'm assuming we'd have a viable record by now.
I think that's I really like that idea. I think that's a good idea. And it might be a good idea to set a finite number. I don't know the volume of this practice. If we said, well, all of your new patients in December, that, you know, that could be 5 or it could be 55. So do we want to set, maybe clarify by setting a specific number? What's everybody else think about that idea?
I like that idea.
I apologize. I should not have even asked you. Mr. Turbinson, do you have any other thoughts about this?
I agree with that idea.
Okay. Then would it be appropriate to entertain a motion to something like that?
Clarification, we would be asking for a patient list for all new patients since December of 2023.
Well, that's part of our dialogue. If that's a large number, that seems onerous. I mean, we don't really need to review that many questions.
Well, and we're just asking for a list of patients so that we could sample, I think, 5. We're just looking for 5 records to look at. Once we get the patient list, we just wanted to have a pool to select from and not have them select the patient file.
Okay.
That's reasonable. I would make a motion that we...
Excuse me, before I take the motion, I'd like to have... Well, go ahead and make a motion and then we'll have discussion.
Okay. Make a motion to have the list of new patients for the month of December, for which you would select 5. To review, and those records would include all billing and insurance information as well.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Yes, clarification.
Can I clarify, are we saying only December or since December? So we would have a full
yeah,
3 months.
Since December, for 3 month period. Yeah, since December, I'm sorry, to be clear.
Okay. By way of discussion, and maybe Mr. Crawford, I'd like to ask you, I'd like to get this done as quickly as possible. I think that if we designated patients at this point in time, it would happen faster. But on the other hand, I don't see the merit of being able to choose which patients we want to look at. Do you believe, Mr. Crawford, that your client would be able to supply that list quickly so that we could proactively get this done and get this thing wrapped up?
Yeah, without talking with him, I could simply ask him to get it done within 30 days, get the list and get it quicker if he can. We would like to get it resolved as well. So, definitely we should be able to get it to you within 30 days, but I will avow to you that as soon as we're done, I will get on the phone with him and tell him to get us the list ASAP, provide it to board staff, and then they can pick the five new patient that they want to see the records on, and we'll do that as quickly as we can too. I have to rely on him to do that, obviously.
Sure. I appreciate your effort. And in a perfect world, one day would be good, because then we could get these records, get them reviewed, and get this back to us quickly and get the matter resolved. So I certainly won't hold anybody to that, but just, you know, we would like to get this thing wrapped up. We don't want to, in the one hand, if the records have, the standard of the records have gone up and there's no action needed by this board, then great, let's move on with our lives. If there's correction, remediation needed, then we'd like to do that as soon as possible. So if you could convey to your client, in the event that this motion passes, if you could convey to your client that we would appreciate expediency on this matter, we would appreciate it very much.
I absolutely will.
Okay, thank you. Is there any further discussion on this motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Actually, procedural questions. I think we didn't get a second on the motion.
We did from Dr.
Oh, okay. Lee. Sorry, I didn't catch that.
And Mr. Turbinson, I think I saw your mouth move, but you're muted. Did you allow that?
Yeah. Can you hear me? I said aye.
Now. Okay. Good.
Okay.
All right. Those opposed, hearing none, unanimous vote with one recusal, the motion is passed. Mr. Crawford, thank you for conveying our thoughts to your client, and it's our hope that we can get this matter wrapped up expediently.
Thank you very much for taking me out of order. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem. All right. Let's move forward to consent agreement item D, tab number one, review and potential action on the proposed consent agreement. Dr. Richardson, are you present today?
He is not. He is not signed in to speak, and he will not be present
tonight. Okay. And is Dr. Richardson represented by legal counsel?
She's also not here today.
Okay. So, Ms. Vanderveen, may we have a board brief?
Yes. If you'll recall, this matter was before you for a formal interview on October 25th. The board voted to move this matter to a formal hearing and to be heard by OWA. As part of the hearing process, the respondent has the right to request a settlement conference. We entered into an informal settlement conference with Ms. Mandy Carvis regarding this, and we drafted the proposed consent agreement that's before you, which is a pretty, it's a order for a stayed revocation for probation and in practice restriction. So it is 5 years probation. He will have to operate under that. It includes several of the PBI extended courses, which is the, they have to create like a protection plan and operate within that and then have follow-up meetings to ensure that they're complying with that. Additionally, there is a practice restriction where he could not practice on his own or in a mobile clinic. He would have to be in a clinic. And that he would be required to have a female chaperone for all patients, all female patients, and that female chaperone would be required to take the PBI chaperone course as part of that. Additionally, he would have to notify any and all employers of this agreement, and the employer would have to notify the board that they received the agreement and understood the requirements within that. And should, because it is a stayed revocation, should he not comply with any part of this order, his license, the board would be able to determine the compliance and could revoke his license.
Thank you. And just by way of board education, including the board chair, could you provide some general outline of the PBI, the content of the PBI chaperone course?
You have it? We've been using this course and had some success. It's a little bit kind of more what the chaperone is to look for, monitor for, how they engage with that practitioner, and the responsibility to report any findings to the board. So it's just to give them a better idea of what it really means to be a chaperone, not just that there is a chiropractic assistant or something in the office, maybe not aware of what the agreement is and the need for the oversight.
So they have to be responsibly informed and accountable for a certain role in monitoring what's going on, correct? Mr. Dominic, do you want to amplify on any of that at all?
Yeah, the course description is the goal of a medical chaperone is to serve independently as a responsible, neutral, and objective third party during clinical encounters. This course is designed to provide the knowledge and skills necessary for one to serve as an effective chaperone, a valued member of the healthcare team. Through their presence, effectively trained chaperones can protect the interests and well-being of patients, verify the content of clinical conversations and physical exams, and provide documentation regarding clinical encounters.
And again, for the record, PBI is a vendor that we have used for multiple educational mandates.
Correct.
Would you just, for the record, kind of talk a little bit about
that? It's through Southern California University, and it's really talking about courses that differentiate from, for disciplinary and corrective purposes, versus just continuing education. So we've started to move toward these courses, which are more about how do you effectively rehabilitate that practitioner and bring them back into line, as opposed to the difference between taking a sexual boundary course or an ethics course that's just for the purposes of your continuing education. And the purpose of these courses are obviously to take what's in this board order and help them rehab through that order, and note the things that we've noted in the findings of fact.
Thank you. All right. And is the complainant with the initials DA present?
Yeah.
Thank you. And would you like to step forward and identify yourself, please, using your initials?
DA.
Thank you. And you're accompanied by?
Mr. DA.
Mr. DA, thank you. DA, the board members have read the proposed consent agreement. You have 5 minutes to make a statement if you would like to make one.
Okay. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the board. I am going to be completely honest with you. I do not agree with this proposed consent agreement, although I feel the board has already made up their mind. I will stand firmly on what I know to be factual. Dr. Richardson did make a comment about my breasts in 2019, and he did massage my breast. Dr. Richardson absolutely, without a doubt, digitally penetrated me in April 2020 in the dry needling room at Stamp Medical. We absolutely did have sexual relations during the course of treatment. It began in April of 2020. I never told Dr. Richardson that I wanted to get to know him better. Dr. Richardson never mentioned anything about waiting 3 months before engaging in a sexual relationship because he had already violated me in April 2020. There was always a doctor-patient relationship from December 11th, 2018 through August 18th, 2022. That relationship ended when I left Dr. Richardson's house that night. There are 50 dates of service from April 17, 2021 through August 18, 2022, when I saw Dr. Richardson for treatment at his home, for which he did not keep records. This was his home. If these appointments were just for sexual relations, I definitely would not have been going to his house just for sex, not knowing if his wife was going to be home or not. I did, in fact, pay Dr. Richardson $60 cash for each treatment, with the exception of one or two times he didn't take payment, and those were days when we only had sex. Dr. Richardson did not release me. There is no release letter in my file at Stamp Medical. The release letter he provided was falsified. I had an appointment scheduled for April 14, 2021 at Stamp Medical, which was canceled on April 13, 2021, when Dr. Richardson let me know he was set up to treat patients at home. Dr. Richardson made numerous false statements to the board. Dr. Richardson lied numerous times under oath. Dr. Richardson manipulated me physically as well as mentally. Dr. Richardson knew I had been sexually abused. I am a victim. Dr. Richardson took advantage of my vulnerabilities. Dr. Richardson exploited me. He was indeed my chiropractor. He didn't keep records for those visits, and he used me for sex while accepting my money. Do those actions really indicate good intentions? What type of person takes advantage of a woman's vulnerability, uses her for sex while treating her as a patient and accepting payments? I have never cheated on my husband until Dr. Richardson. Ladies and gentlemen, I had absolutely nothing to gain by lying. I spoke the absolute truth. Dr. Richardson, on the other hand, had a reason to lie. He knew what he was doing could very well cost him his license. I feel that Dr. Richardson didn't think I would ever come before the board, and I may not have if it weren't for my therapist. I told her about the so-called affair and how it began. She told me Dr. Richardson exploited me. She said it was against board regulations for a doctor to have sexual relations with a patient. She read through the voicemail transcript. She pointed out his narcissism and gaslighting. She was so sure the board would see that. Do you honestly believe that Dr. Richardson did not do this intentionally? One of the problems with this consent agreement is there is absolutely no way for the board to ensure Dr. Richardson will comply with not treating patients at home or mobile. Dr. Richardson has the ability to call or text his female patients, and who knows where that would lead. The board would be taking him at his word, and may I just say I have learned that Dr. Richardson is not the man of his word. He blatantly lied to the board. He blatantly lied under oath. And lastly, he's not even required to undergo a psychosexual evaluation. Honestly, I don't comprehend why the board would want a perpetrator to be able to continue to practice. Dr. Richardson took an oath. He broke it. He knew what was at stake. I did search for similar sexual misconduct cases. I found a few of them, but this one stood out. This case was 2003-042. I realize it is from 21 years ago, but surely the board still finds sexual relations with a patient a very serious offense. The state had called Dr. D. Hessler, D.C., as an expert witness. He testified that there is a public trust between a doctor and a patient, and there is also an imbalance of power between a doctor and a patient. He testified that this special public trust is violated when a doctor engages in sexual conduct with a patient. Dr. Hessler also testified that such conduct is never appropriate, even if the conduct is consensual. In this case, the chiropractor's license was revoked. I believe Dr. Richardson's license should also be revoked. I don't believe he should be given an opportunity to practice after exploiting me, making false statements to the board, lying under oath, not keeping records of treatment for a patient, and providing a falsified document. I hope this is given careful consideration before accepting this consent agreement. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for having the gumption to do what you've done.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. What I would like to do at this point is to ask my board members if they have any questions for DA at this point in time.
I have no questions.
Dr. Camacho? Mr. Turbinson, any questions?
I have no questions.
All right. And since Dr. Richardson is not here, we're not able to ask him. Okay, we will now begin deliberation. Thank you. You can stay there or you can take your return to your seat, which would probably be more comfortable.
Thank you.
Can I say one thing?
I don't think that that's permissible, sir. I'm sorry.
Okay. But we've reached out to, like, a lot of you.
I understand. And
not a word back from any of you.
Not
a word back from any of you.
That's correct.
That's not right.
Thank you, sir. just for the record, it would be inappropriate for individual board members to have responded to any of this. It would have breached our relationship relative to it. So now, we'll now begin deliberation. Ms. Powell, where, would you like to start? Ms. Powell, Ms. Yeah. Would you like to start? Great.
I think nowhere to begin on this. I certainly appreciate your courage coming forward. I do. And we take this very seriously. I don't want you to think for a minute that we don't. We do. We always hope that in a program like this, what we're considering, that there is hope for rehabilitation, that this was just a one-time event. But I understand and appreciate how you feel. So I have concerns about even the consent agreement, but I understand that that should be an option.
A consent agreement?
The one that they that staff prepares.
Okay. And what are your concerns?
My concerns are that the doctor knew what he was doing and did it with, you know, with that in mind, continued to pursue her for a long period of time. It wasn't a one-time engagement or even a couple of times, but it continued. I'm concerned that he would lie to his board under oath. Very concerned about that. I don't think a psychosocial examination would do any good because I've seen people who are sociopaths pass that test. I don't place much credence in that. And so this was the most viable option. I'm concerned about the line, concerned about the duration of time, and we need to be consider that seriously, mm-hmm. whether he is someone who could be rehabilitated. I know that the joint is anxious to have him back, and I understand. And I also understand what this means to revoke a doctor's license. It's serious. It's how he earns a living. It's not an easy decision for us. I want you to know that. We're taking away someone's livelihood, and that sticks in my craw, so to speak. I'm concerned about that as well. So those are my concerns.
Okay. Any others?
No, that's it.
Thank you. Dr. Camacho.
Well, you know what I've said in the past on considering this matter, but I guess one thing I could say is that, you know, what's going to be done is basically, which is all I have to mention that. But I guess at this point, have you considered doing any legal?
Excuse me, sir. Dr. Camacho, we cannot question.
Okay, well, at this point, that's all I can say is that, you know, there's an issue that I think it should go forward if they could, in this situation. For this person to look into doing something legal to see if there really was something wrong done here.
Are you suggesting that are you saying that what we're doing is outside of civil or legal issues and that would be an option for
right,
the complainant?
Right, right.
Is that what you're saying?
That would be an option for her in that sense.
Yeah.
I know, but like, as Paul mentioned, the idea of removing somebody's license is basically, in any case, a death sentence, you know. Be like out here in the West where somebody steals your horse and you ain't got nowhere to go. So I think that would be the best option. If that's possible. Pursuing a legal matter in her situation.
Okay.
Against the doctor.
I understand. So, but with regard to deliberations relative to this consent agreement, what are your concerns?
I think at this point, that's probably the only way we can go on this matter.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Turbinson, I would appreciate your comments on the matter.
Yeah, I kind of echo what Ms. Powell was talking about. I have some concerns about Dr. Richardson's credibility, and I think he gave some responses in, again, reviewing the transcript that it seemed a little deceptive, and you know those related to kind of the nature of the roles here, and he was kind of, I think, a little bit less than forthcoming about the nature of the timeline and the whole issue with regard to the release, and I have a lot of concerns with that. He was trying to use a purported release as a basis to do whatever he wanted, knowing that DA had experienced sexual assault at a young age and was suffering with that, and knowing, you know, there's a an issue of you know, a power dynamic there of a doctor over a patient. So I do have concerns with the consent agreement as drafted. I'm not sure that it addresses the core issues, and I'm not sure he has been fully forthcoming to the board about what he did. And I'd appreciate him being more forthcoming, and maybe if he had been or appeared to have been, I'd be more willing to allow the or to vote in favor of the consent agreement. But I just have concerns with looking back on some of his responses to questions that I asked and questions actually that Ms. Powell asked, and looking, you know, it seems like he was being deceptive to us. And I think that this is more than just a momentary lapse of judgment. I think this is something a little more severe.
Thank you. And so my opinion about this is echoes much as what has already been said. When we get into a situation where we have unsupportable, undocumentable, opposing pieces of information, both alleged to be fact, it puts the board into a position where we have to make the, you know, judgment calls about what's credible and what's not. And this has been a very difficult case to adjudicate. We know that there's consent on both sides that this relationship continued on an ongoing basis. Wasn't that no party on these here is completely innocent. That said, and being very familiar with the fact that the provider does have a higher authority and responsibility to a patient, and those are all factors which went into the construction of this consent agreement, which takes us basically as close to the edge of revocation as can possibly get without actually revoking. That said, I'm hearing what my board members are saying. And so my question here is, and it's a procedural one, in the event that we decline to accept this consent agreement, the next step would be to move forward to formal interview.
No, it's already been through the formal interview. It's already at a formal hearing.
Okay.
So it would just be moving forward with the formal hearing at OLA.
Okay.
And issuing the official notice of complaint.
So please walk through that alternative so that the board members are comfortable understanding it.
I think part of the consent agreement, in addition, is it's not appealable. So if he signs this and agrees to this, he can't appeal. If you find that he doesn't comply and you want to revoke his license, there is no appeal option for that. Now, this matter is scheduled to go before OWA, so, and Casey, step in if I misstate this, you will not be hearing this in a formal hearing. This will be heard by an administrative law judge at OWA, and they will make a recommendation as to the options. And they don't necessarily have to select revocation based on the facts and evidence presented at that hearing. So they'll bring that back to you to hear or to just take their recommendation, and you can choose to take it or you can choose to do something different with it. And then he would have the option to appeal that decision.
And you're concurred with everything you said?
Yeah, that's a good summary. Goes before OWA, it goes before an administrative law judge who not familiar with the facts. The judge will hear what is presented by both parties. The judge makes findings, credibility determinations in a case like this with conflicting versions of events. She'll make credibility decisions, findings of fact, and then that comes back to the board. The board can accept, modify, or reject the conclusions and recommendations of the administrative law judge. Revocation is not certainly not a guaranteed recommendation from OLA, since once the board makes its final disciplinary action, he actually has two separate methods of judicial review. There's the traditional judicial review of administrative decisions, wrote, and then in the past couple years, recently, there's a new statute that allows him to seek a trial de novo in Superior Court. So, depending on how long, how vigorously he wants to contest whatever the board's disciplinary decision is, it could go on for years. So it's a long process, or it could be. But yeah, so the next step would be going to OWA, having a hearing. That would probably be 60-ish days from now. Then the judge, in probably another 30, 45, prepares her findings of fact, conclusions of law. So they'll get agendized to the board. They'll get put on a board meeting, board meeting decision, and then what happens from there.
Thank you. I guess I have a comment, and that is while the administrative process of that option is burdensome, I don't think that that's a factor in the decision that we make today. I think that we make a decision today on whether we feel this is the right thing to do or not. The motions that would be available to us would be approve the consent agreement or disapprove the consent agreement, or would it be not approve the consent agreement and refer the matter to OWA?
So you have three options. You can approve this proposed consent agreement and rescind the motion for formal hearing before OWA. If there's anything you feel that staff has missed, we can amend the consent agreement. If there's something you feel like we could add, we can do that, and then we'll put it back before Dr. Richardson and his legal counsel for signature, or you can deny the proposed consent agreement and just proceed to formal hearing.
Formal hearing, and that would be
before
at OWA. Okay, thank you. And again, I'm open to comments. My comment is that my impression, having studied the consent agreement critically, I think that the staff did a fine job. I think that this is as close to revocation as you can get without, you know, ankle bracelet or something. So any other questions from board members relative to this matter? Yes, Dr.
Just briefly, so it will have to go to the procedure,
Office of Administrative Hearing.
You'd be looking at least a whole year before anything could be done, right?
Just before OWA, probably 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there's any judicial review of that, of whatever the board decides to do with that, that's another can of worms.
Right. Okay.
I was just wondering about the treatment at home and treating patients at home. Can that be included in this?
That's already in this agreement.
It's
already a practice restriction. He cannot treat patients at home. All female patients have to have a female chaperone and that they've taken that PBI course. Again, he can't have a mobile practice either. And so again, should he do those things, he comes back before you and you revoke his license. That's it, it's over. There's no other hearing, it just comes back before you for a motion for revocation.
Sir.
I'm sorry.
That's my final warning. So as I was about to say, the complainant's concern was the
mm-hmm.
lack of ability to monitor this.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that is a concern if we
mm-hmm.
do have someone who's completely unreliable. Mr. Turbinson, Ms. Powell have both expressed concerns with regard to that reliability. I share that concern. So
can we rely on the joint if he's moved to another office, for example, to have in place a monitor or sometimes it's very last minute movement?
So they've already provided us with, I believe, 3 to 4 individuals that have already taken the chaperone course for this purpose. So as I stated previously, we were very adamant that he had to provide the consent agreement and they had to provide in writing to the board
right.
that they were aware of it and the restrictions that were part of it. And I think that staff will say we've had the same concerns about the mobile practice and all of that. There are requirements in terms of, right, he has to have an address on file with the board where he's treating patients as part of his requirements in terms of that. And I understand that it is a hard area to monitor. But again, I would fall back on if he does do it, his license is revoked.
And I guess I would still ask, can we depend on the joint to be forthcoming about an event that may happen given our past experience in that arena?
Well, I don't that needs to be part of our, I think that same question would be asked anywhere that he went to work.
Sure.
And so,
I don't mean to isolate.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm saying
yeah.
is that that's a ubiquitous okay. problem. It would be the case wherever.
Okay.
Are there any other points that have not been discussed? I think we've kind of touched upon the key points. Okay, so that said,
I just have one question, clarification for Mr. Hutchison. If this goes to OWA, are we then given as the board a full evidentiary record basically of what was presented at OWA, so all exhibits, all transcripts and everything?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so we are now at a point, I think, where we would entertain a motion. The motion would be, as described by Ms. Vanderdeen, to either accept the consent agreement, accept it with modifications, or decline it and refer it to formal hearing, whichever. and those are the three options. Would anyone care to make a motion?
Can I motion the letter? The reprimand? The
your motion is to accept the consent agreement.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, at least I put those guidelines in the restrictions that.
Okay.
Definitely have to follow those.
Is there a second to the acceptance of the consent agreement? Is there a second? Is there a second?
Yes, I would second the motion.
Okay, it has been moved and seconded. Any further discussion of the motion before we move to a vote?
Just briefly, and the reason that I made the second, I think we're just delaying the inevitable and that something's going to happen. This does bring us as close to revocation as possible. And I think we're doing the right thing, and if he moves slightly, the issue's done. And I think he'll take it very seriously.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we will do a roll call vote, please. So if you'll please call the roll.
Absolutely. Ms. Angela Powell?
Yes.
Dr. George Camacho?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell Turbinson?
No.
Dr. Wayne Bennett?
No. So we, and we have one recusal, correct?
Correct.
So we have a tied vote. What is the procedure with regard to a tied vote? The motion fails to pass, correctly?
Yes.
Okay. So is it appropriate then to entertain an alternative motion?
Yes.
Okay. So with that in mind, I would entertain an alternative motion.
I'll make an alternative motion, Mr. Chairman, to revoke the doctor's license.
You mean to refer to for an administrative hearing and have that process occur?
Yes.
Okay. It's been moved to decline the consent agreement and to move forward with the process of replication through OWA. Is there a second to that?
I'll second that.
Mr. Turbinson has seconded. Is there any further discussion in this matter? Hearing none again, we will take a roll call vote.
Ms. Angela Powell?
Yes.
Dr. George Camacho?
No.
Mr. Mitchell Turbinson?
Yes.
Dr. Wayne Bennett?
Yes.
Motion passes
3-1, recusal. So the matter here has, determination is that we will be moving this forward to the with the intent to revote to the Office of Administrative Hearing. Is that correct? Okay, thank you. That completes the matter. We will move on to the next item. Welcome back, Dr. Lees. Next on the agenda is item E, tab number 2. I'm sorry, that is right. The initial action of case number 2023-28 with Dr. Mohammed Awad.
Good morning.
Did I pronounce that correctly,
correct.
Dr. Awad?
Sorry.
Good, thank you. And I assume you are present today.
Correct.
All right, thank you. And are you represented by legal counsel today?
Correct.
Thank you. Councilman, would you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Doug Guffey. I'm an attorney for Dr. Awad.
Thank you. And Ms. Vandeveen, may we have a board brief, please?
The investigative facts and allegations are fact 1, disruptive and abusive behavior, fact 2, improper billing, and fact 3, danger to the health, safety, and welfare of the public.
Thank you. Dr. Awad, the board members have read your response to the complaint. You have up to 5 minutes to make an opening statement if you would like to make one.
Dr. Awad would like me to certainly make the opening statement, and I'll be very brief. The complaint makes several allegations. Our reply, the affidavits that were attached, and the investigative report make it clear that every factual allegation that was inserted in the complaint has been refuted, and emphatically refuted. So we have a complaint that consists of allegations of a conversation, allegations of abusive action on Dr. Watt's part that can't be checked. We have no affidavit from the woman involved to indicate her statements of fact under oath. And every fact stated in the complaint that can be checked has been shown to be false. So I submit that these facts bear on the credibility of the allegations that cannot be checked, and suggest that they should be discarded as well. The staff report made a suggestion that there was a conflict of interest between Dr. Awad's actions as agent for these two young men. Point out, and Dr. Awad can speak to this, that because of his facility with the languages of the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, the Emirates, and Qatar, and because there's a large number of young men from those areas that attend ASU, he has developed a special position in the community, the academic community, where he looks out for the interests of these young men who are so far from their families and in a country where they don't necessarily understand all the customs and don't speak the language other than technical matters with any great mastery. So he does go out of his way to help them. These two young men had been his patients, but were no longer his patients because they had left the country. And in that posture, he acted for them in connection with an automobile accident and their relationship with their attorney, who was supposed to press their claims. While it's true that Dr. Awad would benefit from settlement of those claims, he had no particular interest in them being settled for any particular amount. His interests and the young man in question were completely aligned. So we submit that there was no conflict of interest. And that we submit justifies dismissal of this complaint.
Thank you, Mr. Guffey. Would you care to amplify on anything with that, Dr. Awad?
Yes, sir. The whole conversation, when I called that office, I called on behalf of the patient because there was...
Excuse me, sir. Please refer only to initials when you're talking about patients.
I called on behalf of the patient to see what's going on with his case. So there were two people involved in that accident. One of them got sold, and the other gentleman... it seems like he forgot about his case. And when I called, I just called to, hey, what's going on with this? Why is this one settled and this one's not settled? The whole conversation was not more than 12 seconds. Me and him. Mm-hmm. So that's all what happened.
Okay. Anything else?
No, sir.
All right, thank you. Is the complainant with the initials JS present? Second call, is the complainant with the initials JS present? JS does not appear to be present. JS had emailed the board staff stating that he would like to withdraw the complaint, but a complaint cannot be closed without the board doing its due diligence to investigate the complaint first, and so we will proceed with questioning with regard to that. Board members, you have read these. Is there any additional information, by the way, that we've read all the materials that you've provided? Is there any additional information you'd care to add beyond that?
The additional thing, sir, is if I did this power of attorney for my own good, I have discounted my fees over the third to discount the case to settle it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that's basically it.
Okay, thank you. And ordinarily, we would have questions for JS. JS is not present. So let's ask the board if they have any members, if they have any questions for Dr. Awad. Ms. Powell?
One quick question. Did you charge a fee for representing, sort of, state?
No, ma'am.
Thank you.
Mr. Turbinson, any questions?
No questions.
Thank you. Dr. Lee?
No questions.
Dr. Camacho?
No
question. Okay. I have a couple of questions just for clarity. Who is the owner of Gilbert Complete Medical? Okay. And what is your relationship as a provider in a clinic that says medical clinic on it, as opposed to chiropractic?
It's a one-stop shop. We have a chiropractic and we have the medical side.
Okay. And then you function as a provider within the clinic that you own. Is that correct?
The chiropractic side, correct.
Yes. Okay. So what is the relationship then between the Pure Chiropractic Family LLC?
So Pure Chiropractic Family LLC, we opened it back in September, I remember the exact date, September of 2022, I believe so.
So the Gilbert Complete Medical Clinic preceded, this is a different entity that was created since that time?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. I need to understand what's going on here. So I don't have the opportunity to say this very often. We see a lot of bad records here. Your records were very good, sir.
Thank you.
I was impressed with the quality of your records.
Thank you.
And in reviewing the records, your treatment period went from 6/25/21 to 8/18/21. The patient then left the country. Is that correct?
Correct, sir.
All right. And then there was a final examination on 4/5/23 when you determined that the patient had reached maximum medical improvement. Did he return to the country for that exam?
He's from Qatar. He serves in the army over there. He had no relatives right here or anybody that he can to be on his behalf in the United States. So, you know, I'm involved a lot with international students when they come first to the country. I do speak three different languages, 26 different dialogues. So I communicate with this community since 2008. So I'm known, very well known in that community. If you guys need any instructions about where to get your car insurance, go open bank account, what the rules and laws in the United States.
Okay, thank you. Okay, good. And so, but in point of fact, he did return to the country, you did do an examination, you determined he'd reached maximum medical improvement, and you released him from care. Is that correct? Okay, thank you. I have no other questions. Any other questions from board members? Okay. In terms of deliberation, any thoughts, comments? I see no basis to move forward on this matter. Unless anybody, Mr. Turbinson, I see your mouth moving. Did you have something to say?
It appears that we might have JS.
Yes.
On the line.
Hi, good morning. This is attorney. Apologize for joining so late. I had another meeting right now.
Okay. Identify yourself. You are JS, is that correct?
Yes, attorney, and I just had a brief comment to conclude, and I hope it helps in any way.
Okay. Feel free to make your comments, sir.
Yes, thank you. So I did make this this complaint, but then I also did send an email to the investigations box saying that I wanted to withdraw the complaint because, in all fairness, Dr. Wad was, you know, changed his tune later on, was very professional to finish the case, and apologized to one of my staff members, which I really appreciate. I just hope that in the future, Mr. Awad seeks some sort of, you know, counseling or help to deal with high stress situations. And then also, as an attorney, I feel that the power of attorney that he uses is very problematic because, like he just mentioned, this student community, international student community, is very vulnerable to seeking help and seeking, you know, advice. And sometimes, you know, he has to be cognizant of the fact that he cannot give legal advice. He cannot tell them, like you just mentioned right now, what the laws are. He has to stick to his area of, you know, chiropractic and nothing else. And the absolute power of attorney gives him, too broad of a power. And in the minds of the students and of the patients, they believe that he has absolute power over everything. Like he said, like he just mentioned right now, opening bank accounts, closing bank accounts, distributing funds. And that is what I found to be very, kind of scary and something that should be, you know, put a check on. But I understand that he since, you know, thought about this more. And I just wanted to bring that because it's my, duty to protect the clients and to protect the community. And I think that is what this board is interested in as well. But that, with that said, I withdraw my complaint if that helps at all. And I appreciate the board looking into us.
Thank you, sir. And you probably missed it early on, but we did make a note for the record that you have withdrawn your complaint.
Thank you.
Any questions? Are any questions for JS from board members while we have his presence?
One more real quick, if I may.
Yes, Ms. Powell.
Do you use that power?
Are you asking JS or are you asking Dr. Watt?
I'm sorry, Dr. Watt.
Okay,
I'm
this one.
Doctor. Do you use that power of attorney to assist these people in this community in any other way, or is it just for the purpose of settlement on their PI cases?
That was just the settlement. Well, I mean, that's one of the only times, really, we had a power of attorney.
So it's not commonplace?
No, ma'am, no.
Okay. Thank you.
Any questions for JS?
No questions for JS.
Any other questions for JS? Okay, so we're back on track here. We had, I think, completed deliberations in this matter. And if so, I would entertain a motion. The motion would be to move this matter to what would be the next?
Do you want to dismiss? Or,
yeah, the question would be dismiss or what would be the alternative?
Board staff recommendation was simply to issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter pursuant to ARS 32924E2 and 32910101A, which would just be, should this, it's just a non-disciplinary advisory letter, and it's the one that
If behavior continued, it would be concerning. Okay, board members, so those are your options. What motion would you like to make?
I move to dismissal.
The motion is made to dismiss. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
There's been a second. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Okay, the motion to dismiss is approved unanimously. This matter is closed. Thank you very much for your participation in this.
Thank you, sir.
Moving now to tab number three, item E, tab number three, the initial action of case number 2024-015, Dr. Corrine Bender. Dr. Bender, are you present today?
I am.
Okay, thank you. Please come forward to the table. And are you represented by legal counsel?
I am.
Thank you. And counsel, please introduce yourself for the record.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'm Julie Gunnigal on behalf of Dr. Bender.
Thank you. And so, Ms. Vanderbeek, may we have a board brief?
The investigative facts and allegations are disruptive and abusive behavior, sexual improprieties, and failure to create an adequate patient record.
Thank you. Dr. Bender, the board members have read your response to the complaint. You have up to 5 minutes to make an opening statement if you would like to make one.
Yes. Defer to Mike. Just briefly, Mr. Chair, on behalf of Dr. Bender, we would like to thank this board for its detailed and thorough investigation in the case. During the course of the investigation, Dr. Bender produced hundreds of pages of documents that dispute the factual basis of the complaint. We agree with the investigative report, finding that the first two and the most serious two allegations cannot be substantiated on these facts. My client is here to answer any questions and would like to briefly address the charting issue identified.
Please.
Good morning. I would also like to thank the board for its professionalism in handling this delicate matter and your thorough investigation. To address the charting issue identified in the report, where I did not chart which therapeutic exercises were recommended, it had not been my practice to do so. However, it will be my practice going forward. At an appointment, I demonstrate exercises for my patients, checking on their technique and their understanding of what is recommended. But that being said, I am always looking for the opportunity to learn and do better. And so for that reason, I am grateful that the board and the report pointed out that these exercises should be better documented. While I would obviously prefer to see a full dismissal in this case, please know that irrespective of whether this board orders a non-disciplinary for continuing education, I intend to take the medical record keeping class that was suggested to brush up on my skills for the future. So thank you again.
Thank you. All right. Is the complainant with the initials JB present?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you, JB. Welcome and thank you for participating in the meeting. We will refer to you by initials only to protect confidentiality. For the record, can you please state your initials?
JB.
Thank you. The board members have read your complaint. Do you have any additional information that was not provided in the complaint that you believe the board should consider? You have up to 5 minutes to make your statement, sir.
Good morning, board members. Thank you for the opportunity to present my complaint this morning. And no, I don't have any additional information to provide the board other than what I included in my preliminary statement. I think it's pretty much complete unless anybody has any additional questions. But the reason for the delay in my complaint was I have a, and maybe it's in the record in my original complaint, but I did move here recently or a year ago before I met the doctor and from California, and I had a prior chiropractic relationship with my California doctor, Dr. Eugene Orlowski. And after confiding with Dr. Orlowski, he's the one that actually encouraged me to come forward and present my complaint to the Arizona board. So if anybody has any questions regarding that, that's one of the main reasons for my delay in making a complaint, my original complaint. But Dr. Orlowski is one of the been in private practice for 45 years. He actually lectures on practice management, client management, patient management. And so he just indicated to me recently that this is something that that I'm talking about. What doctor allegedly had done is something that they don't really, it's not something that's really considered it's a bad situation, is what he said, and that's something that we that he said I should present to the board, and that's the reason for my delay. And I just want to know that if that's clear, and make that additional clarification in the record.
Okay, thank you. Anything else to add?
No.
Okay, thank you. So board members, any board members have questions for Ms. the complainant? We'll begin questioning Dr. Bender first. Procedural issue here. Ms. Powell, do you want to begin questioning?
Yes. Doctor, you had a personal relationship with this man before you started treating him. Is that correct?
Yes, I did have a personal relationship with him, and he was never my patient.
Never?
No.
But you started treating him.
He came, I don't know if you read through it, but mm-hmm. I can summarize a little bit. He and I met online in early January. I'm a widower of 30 years. I was married for 30 years. I lost my husband to COVID. And I had met JB that way, and our connection was intimate almost immediately, having those conversations about survivor grief and so many different things. So it became very intimate and very sexual. He had a son, has a son, a 14-year-old son who was visiting from Argentina. And his late wife never met or acknowledged his son, and so he wanted me to meet his son before his son went back to Argentina. His son, being 14 years old, obviously wants mom and dad to be together, and he wasn't ready to introduce his son to me as a personal interest, so we thought a social setting would be more appropriate. And so he came into my office on a Saturday with his son under the premise that telling his son that I was a friend and his chiropractor. So he came into the office and he filled out some intake paperwork. I never took any money from him. I did not take his insurance card. I did not bill his insurance, anything like that. In between patients, I did take into a treatment room. We chatted for a bit. I did stretch out his lower back because his lower back was tight. I knew he did have a chiropractor in California, and I knew that he also had PT here.
Not to interrupt you, Doctor.
Okay.
I'll just get to the point. So when he brought his son in, that was just to create an illusion for this young man.
Correct.
He wouldn't
flip
out.
Right, right. And he was...
Is that the only time you treated this man, stretching out his back?
Yes.
The only time you had him, son.
Yes.
Can you just give me a little bit of background, just quickly, briefly, the investigation that's taking place? There are so many counts of stalking or... that this man didn't leave you alone.
So, yeah, there's an order of protection for harassment against JB.
And he has not honored that?
No, and he has violated the order of protection to date with the Phoenix police over 250 times. I do have a detective assigned to my case. My detective informed me, and I believe that the investigator had the opportunity to speak with the detectives that were assigned. They are seeking felony harassment charges because of the exorbitance of the violations. It just so happens, according to timeline, that this I'm hearing from my detective, when the detective informed this of me late in October that they were going to seek this, and I had a conversation with the detective, and it seemed like within probably a week or two of JB finding out that what the Phoenix police were planning on doing, that's when the complaint was made to the board against me.
Okay.
In addition, there's other emails that you will see where there's taunting about. He believes that I broke up with him because of health concerns, and he wanted an apology from me.
I remember reading that.
Okay.
I got the idea.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No more questions.
Any questions? All right. Dr. Lees, do you have any questions?
I have no questions.
Dr. Camacho?
Yeah, I have this person, Davey, this doctor, does he have any kind of mental issues other than losing his wife? Has he been diagnosed with some psychological profile?
So I'm a chiropractor, and so I wouldn't be able to say per se. He had conversations with me that he suffers from OCD, and in one of the emails that he sent me that I presented to the board, he actually indicates that he's never experienced this level of frustration and obsession before in his life.
Any other questions?
No.
Mr. Turbinson, any questions?
I just have one clarification. In the response you provide, you reference treatment notes. Are those the treatment notes that we have as Exhibit H?
I'm not sure what Exhibit H would be.
Exhibit H is the patient records for the complainant. Exhibit I, we have requested more recent patient notes since there were some deficiencies in the ones for the complainant, and they provided the most recent patient medicine.
Okay. I guess I'm just trying to understand, I'm trying to reconcile how you have treatment notes and patient records when you're saying you never treated him?
No. So due to my document retention protocol, when he came in with his son to my office, he filled out an initial questionnaire, which I have and I kept because he filled something out in my office. When we went back into the room and I stretched him because I did, stretch him, and that's why those chart notes weren't really chart notes. I just basically put down what I did. And so that's why I had that and I kept that together.
Okay. Okay. I don't have any other questions.
Thank you. Doctor, I do have questions.
Okay.
There's a treatment record is either a treatment record or there's no treatment
okay.
record. And the treatment records that we reviewed did have patient intake forms that were filled out.
Right.
But there was also a SOAP note mm-hmm. that was populated, I believe, by you.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a treatment record of an encounter.
Sure.
We don't have a special category of fake treatment records.
No. Well, and that's why, because he was in my office, because I stretched his lower back, I filled something out.
Okay, so that means that, in fact, you did establish a doctor-patient relationship with him, and you made a medical record recording that experience, correct?
Okay.
Do you agree?
I would say, I guess, yes, then. If he came into my office, but he came into my office as my boyfriend, not as a patient per se.
Okay. But you made a patient record of him. You kept a patient record in your medical
yes.
record with a SOAP note
yes.
and so forth. And so what that means is all the rules that apply to a doctor-patient relationship are now in effect. You understand?
Okay.
And because of that, I have some pretty significant concerns.
Okay.
in the admitting form that he filled out, he reported a history of cauda equina.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
I did.
Okay. And from your perception as a doctor, what is the significance of a patient who's reporting cauda equina?
Well, I know that with cauda equina, he had some nerve damage. to the lower nerves of his lower back. And he does have some permanent nerve damage.
Okay. Do you understand that any patient who presents and reports that they have cauda equina, that's almost an immediate red flag as a contraindication to care?
Yes.
Okay. And for reasons that we now understand, you didn't follow up on that with any history of, okay, what's going on with your cauda equina and all that stuff. Yeah.
And I'm sorry if I may.
No, please, feel free.
So he was under regular care with his chiropractor in California. He still saw his California chiropractor regularly. His job, even though he moved here to Arizona, his job is stationed in the Pasadena area. And so he had regular chiropractic care going back and forth with his chiropractor. So he's never left that particular practice to take care of him.
Yes, and I appreciate all that, and it's all relevant. Okay. It just doesn't happen to be present in your record.
Okay.
What I'm trying to point out here is that you created a patient record on a patient who self-reported cauda equina that you were aware of, and the standard of care for that situation would be a certain set of precautionary measures that would be documented in the record. And while you've just given me the stuff that should have been in the record, it's not in the record.
Okay.
So, I don't want to go into way too much detail here, but clearly the record that you created for him may not have been consistent with the quality of records that you keep for other patients?
Correct.
Okay. So things like the definition of a spasm, you're talking about the presence of a spasm. Did you examine the patient and determine the presence of a spasm?
Yes, I stretched out his lower back, and when I stretched out his lower back, there was some tightness and muscle spasms across the lower back.
Okay, can you explain the difference for us between a tightness and spasm?
Yes, and without having the, just in general.
Yes. I'm looking for definition.
So if somebody just has muscle tightness, if I'm looking at range of motion, you can the difference between the tightness would just be a little bit of resistance. If there's a muscle spasm, there could be a trigger point, there could be and not, functionally things could be different.
Okay. I would submit to you that perhaps you need to amplify your understanding of the true definition of spasm.
Okay.
Because the presence of the term spasm has a clear definition, and it elevates the medical importance and acuity of what's going on. And you did use the term, you see where I'm going, we've got a potentially serious thing. You're saying there's a potentially serious finding on what exam you did do. But, and then there were, on your form, your SOAP note, there was opportunity there for certain orthopedic tests that would be appropriate for someone who has a cauda equina or who has spasm, and you did not do any of those tests. So do you see how that reflects on what, what your record tells us is what allegedly happened in the treatment room, and there are concerns about that. If a patient were to come in with those conditions, the standard of care would be, okay, we got a serious situation here, we need to do an appropriate exam, and your record did not say any of that. So that's, again, my concerns there.
Can I also add, I think it's reflected in my notes, I did not, although I, obviously if he came in, I did put my hands on him, which would be a treatment, I did not perform any chiropractic adjustments on him. I stretched out his lower back.
I appreciate that. However, that does not, that's fine, and that might even be an appropriate treatment for someone who had been appropriately examined and appropriate history and so on and so forth.
Okay.
But you did treat him.
Okay.
And that's what we have to operate on.
Okay.
And then we received a record of your treatment of patient LP, who I believe you treated on 12-12 of 23.
Yes.
And that was your treatment in your encounter. Significant difference between the records kept on that patient and the patient that we're talking about today?
Yes.
And would you concede that the reason why there were such great differences was because of what you said earlier, that you were not really treating this as a real treatment?
Well, yes. I would also say that I try to, with all of my patients, give as thorough a record and documentation as possible. The format was also different because where I was working switched to electronic records. So that would be a reason why the format was also different. But yes, you're correct in that.
Okay, so that record-keeping format, you were an employee of that clinic and you were following the treatment protocol that they were supplying to you. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying if you were questioning why it looked different, that's why it looked different. But in response to your question about with my patients, is what I did for LP my standard for patients when they come in for records? My answer would be yes.
So let me sure that I understand that the question I asked is the question you answered. We saw a record-keeping format that consisted of checkboxes and multiple mm-hmm. office visits on one page
mm-hmm.
With no other documentation, no significant room to provide any sort of examination findings, no real history, really a very subpar
mm-hmm.
Record. The record that we reviewed was a far more complete and extensive record. And you, what I heard you say was you, the reason for that is because you changed the record-keeping system. The record-keeping system in a clinic where you were employed was changed. Is that correct?
No. So
help me understand.
Okay. So if your question to me was, was the content more thorough? Okay. Can you? I'm so sorry. This is just. Can you ask me the question?
One date. Your treatment record consists of multiple visits on one page.
Correct.
Really not an acceptable record.
Correct.
Later date, a much improved record.
Correct.
What changed?
LP was my patient, and so she had a full, those were my standard of records. JB was not my patient, so I didn't go through a full record on him.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry if I misspoke when you first asked me the question. I thought you were referring to the fact that the records looked different versus what the content was on it. So if you're referring to the content of what it is, I would say that the difference being I never treated JB as my patient. He was my boyfriend. And you pointing out to me, you know, like I said in the beginning, I appreciate the fact that you'll point out things for me to do better, and I always try to do better, and I always try to learn from experiences. But the difference between a record on JB versus LP, the difference being that record being thorough, that would be what I would typically do for a patient.
All right. So the record, the format that you used when mm-hmm. you treated JP, where did that format come from?
It was more of they were some templates that were present in the previous practice. That wouldn't be the only thing. There probably would have been more supplements and more templates that would have gone into a complete record.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Any other questions before we move on to questioning JB? Yes, Dr. Camacho.
When you did the stretching for mm-hmm. prior over taxes,
mm-hmm.
other than the tightness he felt with his muscles,
mm-hmm.
did he exhibit any symptoms prior or post?
No.
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 Any other questions? Okay. So there being no further questions there, JB, the board has read the complaint, and are there any questions that board members have for JB at this point in time? Ms. Powell?
Yes, JB, just real quick, I would like you to confirm that your relationship with the doctor was one of boyfriend-girlfriend before she treated you.
I guess I refute, just before I answer the question, I guess I like to add or refute some of the comments that the doctor made earlier.
Sir, you can do that just as soon as you answer this question, and we'll give you that opportunity, okay?
Well,
I just want you to confirm that.
Before we met on a dating website in January of last year. We did meet for lunch on January 31st of last year, and we agreed during that time. So we did during those conversations. We crossed over into boyfriend girlfriend status, but we had a prior relationship over the phone, and we had our lunch meeting or lunch date as you call it. On January 31st of 23, and we did agree to meet at her office on February 4th of last year. I don't know if we officially we did have a prior relationship. That's what we can say. Whether she was a boyfriend girlfriend at that time on February 4th when I came to her office on a Saturday morning, I don't know if we officially were a boyfriend at that time, boyfriend, girlfriend. We had only met once before that period of time. We only met for lunch that one time, and then we met at her office on February 4th of last year. So I don't know. I can say we had a prior relationship, but I cannot say at that time when I entered her office on February 4th whether I was her boyfriend or not.
Quote, we were seeing each other on January 10th, for example.
January 10th? No, I never met her on January 10th. That was online on January 10th. I never met her in person. We didn't meet in person until January 31st was our first face-to-face meeting, January 31st of last year. On January 10th, that may have been on the telephone. Excuse me, online on the dating website. Never met face to face until January 31st.
Never physically met
until January 31st of last year.
Okay. Thank you. No more questions.
JB, you said you had a rebuttal comment. Would you please feel free to make those comments at this point in time?
Yes, sir. Thank you. So I'd like to refute some of the things that the doctor indicated in her opening statement. I did visit her office, as I said, on February 4th of last year on a Saturday morning, but we had met prior to that on January 31st for a lunch date, as you call it, a first meeting, face-to-face meeting on January 31st. So when I entered her office, I was with my son, my 14-year-old son at the time, and I did fill out an intake form, as you indicated, Dr. Bennett. And I also gave her my insurance card. I 100% certain. I'm 100% certain that I handed her my insurance card. She made a photocopy of it. I was standing right there. I handed her my insurance card. She made a photocopy of it. I don't know where that copy is, but, I did bring it and handed it to her along with my intake form. There was about another four or five other patients in the room, in the waiting room at the time. I waited about 15 minutes. I entered the treatment room. She called me back. She locked the door behind her when we entered the treatment room. And that's where she immediately started the kissing and the raising her shirt, etc. As I indicated in my opening, my original statement.
Yeah, JB, we've read all of what you said. Is there anything in addition that you have to add?
No, I just want to make it clear that that I did present in addition to my intake form, but the insurance card. So at that time, I thought I was going in for not only introducing her to my son, which they did. They did meet. The two of them did meet, but I did present the intake form along with the insurance card to her at that time before she called me back to the treatment room in the back. So I just want to make that clear from my standpoint.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you. Any other questions from other board members? Dr. Yeah, Camacho, yes.
I'd like to ask, JB, is there a reason why Dr. Bender had to put a restraining order on you?
Right. Dr. B also works as a real estate agent. So when I originally moved here to from California to Arizona, I was also interested in purchasing a home in the Phoenix area. So I had asked her about being a looking for me, being my real estate agent and seeing if she could locate a house for me. So she did work for Coldwell Banker, CB Coldwell Banker at the time. And I did go online and indicated through Coldwell Banker that I wanted her to be my presenting agent to my agent of record, and I was. So I would over the course of the next several weeks, even several months afterwards, I'd send her interest in particular properties that I was interested in, and say not only California but other parts of Florida and so forth. I just want to get her opinion. So she was getting third party indicators, third party emails, or from the search engine, from various search engines such as Apple, and that's where she and not only from me but some members of my family who are also looking to I'm from the Midwest originally, and they're also looking to locate here to the Phoenix area, and they had sent some third party emails. So yeah, that's why she was concerned about the issues, getting third party emails from me and some family members, and she I guess she felt threatened by that, and that's why she went to the Phoenix Police Department, because she was getting these third party responses from various search engines.
Okay, so it was a third-party search engine that made her get...
Third-party search engines, correct. Yep.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No, I think that's...
Dr. Lees?
I just one quick question. Were you charged for your visit at the chiropractic office?
On February 4th, I did present my insurance card, and I tried to locate that on my Cigna, and then I couldn't see for... She didn't charge me any cash, but I couldn't see that she... I didn't see for sure that she had charged me or made a claim against my insurance company. But no, I wasn't charged anything at the time, but I did, as I said, present my insurance card for it. I did not pay anything that day, but I'm not sure if she billed my insurance company or not. I couldn't find anything.
We got it. Mr. Turbinson, any questions?
Yeah, just a few. This may seem like an obvious question, but why did you fill out the intake form?
Why did it fill out the intake form? Okay, thank you for that question. As I thought, I was coming in not only to introduce my son to her, to Dr. B, but I was also in looking for some treatment. As Dr. Bennett had indicated in my intake form, I did list that I had a prior diagnosis of catecholamine, and so I wanted to get her opinion. Also, Dr. B mentioned that I was under current care with my California chiropractor, but I'd already moved. I hadn't seen him in, probably a month or so prior to that. So I wasn't seeing him on a regular basis. So my intention was to, when I moved to Phoenix, to find a local chiropractor, in addition to, moving to a new area, et cetera, and doing other things in that regard. But I wanted to get Dr. B's, opinion on my physical, my health situation, and given the catecholamine situation, so I did fill out the intake form because I wanted her to properly evaluate my care, and that I assumed that I would have a full and a normal treatment when I came in to her office on that day, so that's why I filled it out.
Okay, thank you. I don't have any other questions.
Thank you. JB, I do have one question. I've looked at a report provided by Detective Marshall Miller from the Phoenix Police Department.
Yes.
It's an overview of incident reports, and it states that at the time of that report, there were 241 violations on your part of that restraining order. Is that correct?
Well, If you're asking me if I sent 240 emails,
No, I'm asking you if the report that we got from the police department is correct.
I can't see that it is. 240 incidences of violations. I don't see how that could be accurate. But as I understand, some of the way the search engines work, and I don't understand 100%, but it has to do with some of the search engines that that apply to anytime you go in and out of a certain request. And I don't know. I was, to answer your question quickly, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, that seems pretty high, and I just can't see how that makes sense. 240 instances. I did not send 240 emails or requests for to these third party websites.
Okay. Yeah. Just for the record, I didn't count the number of emails and pieces of correspondence that I read from you between you two in your record, but it was a big number like that, just for the record. And the police department says it was 241.
Right.
Okay.
I don't know.
Any other questions for JP? Any other questions?
No,
okay. Very good. Any other questions for Dr. Bender? Okay. We will begin deliberation at this point in time. And so, Ms. Powell, would you like to start?
Yeah, I don't see, I think the doctor's telling the truth. I think she's got the policy of record keeping techniques. I think record keeping needs to improve. But the patient, if he was a patient, is harassing. No matter how we look at it, it's a lot of counts of violating an order, and the police do take that seriously, and they wouldn't even exaggerate something like that. So I could understand why she'd feel threatened, and I just don't see this as credible. But that's my take.
All right, Dr. Leach.
I agree. I think the big concern is just making sure that she has records as required by law, and making sure that establish a file that's a full file that has everything that's required for a medical record.
Yeah, I agree with that. Basically, that make sure that if that happens, even if it is a relationship like that, a family member,
right?
Make sure you do the records correct.
Well, and you learn something from everything. Yeah. And like I said, even with the newer notes and the documentation, I'm not above learning.
Right. That's about it, really. Other than that, the other records were fine, right? No problem.
Mr.
Turbinson. So this one is a little bit difficult because, obviously we have the record-keeping issues. The issues with regard to the alleged sexual intercourse and there's, admitted, undisputed kissing that was going on in the treatment room. I mean, that's where our rules are different. I mean, you can have a long-standing relationship with a patient, is my understanding of the rules personally, not maybe the boards, but you can't do that in the treatment room. And I think that, the fact of filling out an intake form, the fact of creating patient records and then saying, but that was an actual treatment. No. You don't get to decide what is actual treatment. And so I have concerns there about, there needs to be boundaries. And the whole point, partly in this instance of boundaries, is other patients. I mean, if other patients knew that there was even kissing going on, behind a closed door between a doctor and patient, that's inappropriate. And that's what our rules are supposed to prevent. And so I think there needs to be a clear boundary. I think that boundary was violated here. And I think there's at least evidence of that. So I think this is a little bit bigger of an issue than maybe what other board members are saying.
Yes, and I tend to share your concern. Yes, Doctor.
May I just say something? And this was in my response, and I just want to point this out, number one, my adjusting rooms do not have locks on them. They never did have locks on them. So I did not follow a patient back and
locked the door. I did kiss the patient goodbye, and I did that in the adjusting room, but we weren't fisting like a make-out session is what JB is alluding to. And in fact, in my response, I did say that JB was the aggressor and I held back. In the investigative report, there is also a text message that I did send to JB later on that day that specifically says, I am sorry I needed to be so reserved in my office, but I was in my office. That is included in the exhibit that you all have.
Thank you. And I do recall reading that.
Yes, I refute what you just said, but
sir, we are now deliberating, and so we're going to move into a deliberative phase here with regard to what we want to do. I think we need to discuss alternatives. I think there's a general consensus that there is some correction needed relative to recordkeeping. And that aside, the question is the concerns about it concerns me that doctor, you said, well, he wasn't the patient when in fact he was. That's a barrier issue that you should know, you should be accountable for. And so I believe that something like a requirement to take and pass the ethics and boundaries assessment would be something worth considering relative to this. What are the options that we have in terms of disciplinary and non-disciplinary opportunities here?
If you wanted to move to discipline, you would have to either issue a consent agreement at this phase, or you would have to move the matter to a formal interview. If you wanted to do non-disciplinary, like a non-disciplinary order for continuing education, you could issue that today.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
I don't mean to interrupt
you. No, you didn't.
Is it a violation if I'm a doctor and I have a relationship with someone and then they come into my office and I treat them? Yes, they should be treated same record keeping, no argument. What is the violation there by way of the relationship? I don't think there is. If you have a personal relationship with someone, I'm a doctor and I want to adjust my husband or my boyfriend or whoever, I bring him into the office, fine, I'm required to keep the same standard for record keeping and treatment. But is there that crossing the line there? I don't think there is.
My concern is that what was said to us initially was that there was no treatment, that there was no intent to have a treatment. To me, that's
I agree.
It's one or the other. I mean, it's a boundary issue as far as I'm concerned.
That's what we're looking at.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe we should consider something like a non-disciplinary order for continuing education and offer a consent agreement to take and pass EBAS. Is that an option?
Usually we use the EBAS as a tool to determine whether further action is necessary. If the goal here is to rehabilitate and create boundaries, I don't know that the EBAS is quite exactly what we're looking for, because that's just going to help us determine whether or not there's a boundary issue. It sounds like you've kind of substantiated that on your own. My other potential recommendation would be, we already recommended the PBI course for medical record keeping, but PBI also has a course for boundaries, for professional boundaries, which is a 3-day course that addresses relationship-based conduct, sexual and non-sexual, and focuses on developing a plan to establish and maintain professional boundaries.
Okay, so that would be, in that way, we wouldn't have to take disciplinary action. We can just order that as an additional continuing education requirement. Any other thoughts or comments? Turbinson, are you comfortable that with regard to the issues that you raised, was the doctor's response and the contemplated remediation appropriate?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the issue here isn't some type of power dynamics I think it's completely undisputed. This was a consensual relationship. The issue that I voiced earlier is just, you know, we have boundaries in the rules, and, you know, the rule says engaging in sexual intercourse or oral sexual contact with a patient in the course of treatment. And I think, you know, there are allegations here that that has happened. Now, we don't, this is a little bit unlike the other matters because we don't have necessarily concerns over that this, there was a doctor relationship that was used to kind of force a sexual relationship. So I don't have those concerns, but I do think adding the ethics and boundaries type continuing education would be warranted just on the, on this issue of treatment and where you're, what the boundaries are with a patient.
Thank you. So is it time for someone to make a motion? And if so, what might that motion be?
Chair, might make a motion to issue a non-disciplinary order for continuing education for record-keeping courses through PBI and also the ethics course through PBI.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I second.
Dr. Camacho is second. Is there any further discussion of the motion?
Do we need to clarify, is the course just self-contained? We don't need to say an hour amount?
The course is, it is, and Ryan just pointed out, are we doing professional boundaries or ethics? Because there's two different courses on PBI, one's for ethics and one's for boundaries.
Professional boundaries.
Okay, perfect.
Yes.
Yeah. And does the second agree with that, Dr. Camacho?
Yes, I agree.
Okay. Are you comfortable with that, Mr. Turbison?
Yes, thank you.
Is there any further discussion?
How many days?
Within what time frame would you like the motion to include, Dr. Reese?
We would probably, for two courses, probably do 180 days as a standard.
180 days, thanks.
Dr. Camacho?
I agree.
Okay.
Thank you. The internet, for some reason, my computer lost it, so I wasn't.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed by the same sign?
Nay.
Okay, we have 4 ayes and 1 nay. The motion passes. You will be issued an order for continuing education, and full compliance will terminate the matter completely.
Thank you.
Thank you for your cooperation. It was just about to be said by me. We will take a 10-minute break. We will resume in exactly 10 minutes. It is 10:58. We are resuming session of the Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners. All board members are present either physically or, I believe, Mr. Turbinson. Yes, there he is. Good. All right, next on the agenda is item E, tab number 4, the initial action of case number 2023-043, Dr. Harley Finkel. Dr. Finkel, are you present today? I saw you earlier, and it looks like you're muted, sir. Would you please unmute? Dr. Finkel. Third call out for Dr. Finkel, who I see has joined us via remote connection, but who appears to be muted. We'll check back with him as we move forward. And Ms. Vanderbeen, may I have a board brief relative to this matter?
The investigative facts and allegations are providing substandard care and failure to properly supervise.
Thank you. Dr. Finkel, I'm calling out to you again. I don't see that you've logged back in. Actually, I'm contemplating. Yes.
I'm having a hard time. My Zoom keeps going down on my computer. Like the Wi-Fi keeps going down.
Yeah, mine too.
Okay. We appear to be
having. So the board meeting audio maintains because it's through the phone system, so okay. You don't necessarily have to be logged into your computer. And then I believe, Ryan, on your computer, if you check on the desktop, we have already downloaded the board materials.
But
you
I don't have the board materials.
Okay.
I can't get the screen. Of the, you know, okay. I don't know. That's the reason this person can't talk to us.
I don't think so. But
okay.
Can we get, and what issue are you experiencing?
Same thing.
Dropped out of your Zoom?
Unknown error occurred. Yeah. Just Zoom. I still have my.
So I will reach out to IT and have them check the Wi-Fi in this room. That seems to happen every once in a while.
Okay, so but Dr. Camacho and Ms. Powell, you have access to the board materials.
Yes.
Right. Is
yeah,
there
yeah,
any impediment to your being able to proceed with the board materials?
No, that. Yeah.
Okay, all right, good. And, you know, that's fortuitous because I now see that Dr. Finkel has unmuted. So,
I'm
Dr.
sorry.
Finkel, are you getting...
I'm sorry. I was in the bathroom. I couldn't hold it anymore. So, I'm sorry.
Well, all right, sir. Thank you for joining us. And we have the board members have read your response to the complaint. You have up to 5 minutes, if you like, to make an opening statement if you would like to make one. So would you care to speak, sir?
I believe that the response in writing pretty much covers it. And I've sent in also an affidavit from one of my staff members. Anything I said would just be repetitive to the board. It pretty much covers it in detail.
Okay, thank you, sir, for your brevity in particular. Is the complainant with the initials TG present? Is the complainant with the initials TG present? Asking for a third time, is the complainant...
He's not via Zoom. He's just not... He's, okay, he's just unmuted.
Okay, TG, are you present?
T is in top? TG?
Yes, T is in taco. G is in George. Is TG present? Or is the person representing TG present? Okay, we do not have TG present.
Yes, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay, all right, thank you. We thank you for participating. We will refer to you by initials only to protect your confidentiality. And please, can you state your initials for the record?
TG.
Thank you, sir. The board members have read your complaint that you submitted against Dr. Finkel. Do you have any additional information that was not provided in the complaint that you believe the board should consider? Sir, I see your mouth moving, but I do not hear anything.
The complainant for the next matter, not for the current one. The complainant for Dr. Finkel and then also the patient for Dr. Who let both have the same initials.
Okay.
And now...
So we have two TGs.
Yeah.
Or we have one, but it's the wrong one. Is that correct? All right. So let me just do this for the record and due diligence. We are considering a complaint by one TG relative to Dr. Harley Finkel. And it is that particular TG... who I am now asking if you are present and able to join us. And if so, please identify yourself. I see a hand being waved, but I don't see, are you muted, sir?
No, he's unmuted. I don't know if his microphone is muted now.
It's now muted. Try again, sir. Okay, try again. I see you're unmuted.
AJ.
Patient for the next matter.
Yeah, that's not my patient, but you guys can hear me. He's not my patient.
Okay. I see somebody nodding and speaking. Can we make perhaps a telephonic contact or?
Yeah.
And I'm going to break precedent a little bit while you're attempting to do that. I'm going to ask my board members to ask Dr. Finkel any questions. We'll give TG, if he's able to join us, the opportunity to respond. So do any of the board members have any questions for Dr. Finkel? Dr. Lees?
Dr. Finkel, do you have any office policy regarding medical advice being given by non-medical staff?
Oh, absolutely, and it's in written form, too. My staff's not allowed to give any information whatsoever to the patients. Everything is to be referred to me. Any questions about care, anything that deals with patient management care. My staff is not allowed to give any advice out, period.
Dr. Camacho, any questions?
No, I have no questions.
Ms. Powell?
No questions.
Mr. Turbinson?
No questions, sorry.
Okay, thank you. So for the record, and just by way of making sure that we're displaying due diligence here, Dr. Finkel, you are on the Motor Carrier Safety Administration registry as an examiner, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
All right, and the MCSA does have a specific criteria for whether or not hearing tests are passed or not passed for commercial driver's license exams, correct?
Correct. They're called non-discriminatory. It means the doctor does not have the right or the ability to change those decisions. He must enforce those decisions.
Correct, yes. And as another MCSA examiner, I can confirm that that is the case. did you in your office administer a hearing test to TG during the initial visit?
Yes, we used the Thymus V4 machine.
Okay, and according to the records that I reviewed, the scores were, well, please summarize the scores that were rendered from your initial exam on this patient.
The issue of his hearing was not in question. The issue is that the Department of Transportation requires that the landmarks of the ears be visualized and to make sure there's no occlusion of the canal secondarily to incidences of vertigo caused from compression from wax blocking the canal. It's been a hot spot in contention. It's caused a lot of problems for most doctors. But the rules were up until January that we had to disqualify him if we could not visualize the tympanic membrane. And that's what was occurring in this case, not a loss of vision, or excuse me, not a loss of hearing. It was a loss of the ability to see the canal because it was completely blocked with a very large impacted cerumen.
When I reviewed your examination form, the scores that I saw for your audiometric exam were listed on that form, correct?
Yes, they are.
Would those scores that you listed have qualified the driver as a driver in and of themselves, absent any other disqualifying factor?
Hold on 1 second, please. I got to pull those up on my chart. Just give me 1 minute. Yes, his scores are well within acceptable range for the Department of Transportation, and his averages are well within acceptable ranges.
So when you put the number 5 and the numeric numbers that you put on that form, what do those numbers represent?
The machine is measuring loss, and that is at the amount of loss and that the patient has per frequency. So we have at 500 hertz a small, very small loss, 500 more consistent with age, same at 1,000 and 2,000. The Department of Transportation only requires those three areas, though the machine actually measures 6. And then we're to do an average with it. And as long as you do that, he has to be below 40 decibel loss, which he was well below that. It's more than acceptable. His hearing is actually fine.
Okay. I did not see the non-discretionary requirement by FMCA in the materials. Did you submit those?
No, I didn't, but I could find them. I mean, I'm absolutely positive about this because I've had numerous discussions with the medical because we said that people need to get their ears cleared out. The problem is getting in, and if we have to disqualify them, it loses their livelihood, and we wanted to be able to give them time to get it done. As a direct result of all that influx from all the other doctors, and we've talked about that, as of January 1st, we're allowed to give them 3 months to get their ears cleared now. But prior to that, we had to disqualify them or put them into pending, which he was put to try to get his ears cleared. I've been over this thing a million. Yeah, it's been a hot spot. In fact, I had to create a thing in my office that said, if the membrane is not visualized, you can be disqualified. And I have them sign that. That should be in your documents. It's a problem. and it's been a problem in a lot of practices. But up until January, we had to disqualify them. You must visualize the tympanic membrane. It was in you're probably looking at the revised manual that just came out in January, but the older manual, it was in there that you had to see all the landmarks. You had to make sure that there was no occlusion of the of the canal.
All right. So if, assuming that you are able to provide us the document that you've just said that you can provide us with, can you describe the events that occurred for the record of TG?
He came in for a DOT exam. We did the exam for him. Both ears were severely impacted with wax. We advised him of that. We told him what the reason that the department has a problem with it. They've had some incidences with vertigos and some various things, and they want the ear canal cleared. I then told him that we have an ENT up the street. He's been very favorable at trying to get our patients in and out very quickly. He can go there, get his ears cleaned, come on back. I will re-examine him, and then we can certify him. We did advise him that, you know, it has to be done by a medical professional, because people that try to clear these type of blockages, if it is superficial, it usually works well, but when it's an inclusion like this where it's impacted wax, they never get it out, and then we end up having problems like what I'm dealing with right now. I told him where to go. I advised the staff where to go. It's right up the street. Asked him to go there. Come on back. And he came back. I asked him, the staff asked him first, because it's a requirement, did you see the ENT? He said, yeah, I did. I walked in and I asked him, did you see the ENT? He shook his head, yes. So I went to look at his ears, and they were superficially clean, but inside there was quite a blockage in there. I mean, it was still well impacted. I asked him which doctor did you see. He couldn't answer that. And then he finally admitted to me he didn't go to that doctor. Then he told me he went to a urgent care, and that they did a bunch of stuff, and a PA came in and said his ears are great. And I said, they're not. I said, you need to go back there and get them cleaned out. I said, I cannot pass you when it's blocked like this. He became very argumentative with me, and I said, just get your ears cleared and I can pass you. Then he made a threat, and I told him, the exam's over. You need to leave. And that was it. And then I ended up having to call the police because he was causing a scene in my office.
Okay. We are still attempting to make contact with TG. It appears that he's holding up, suggesting that we call him. Do we have a phone number?
Yeah. Larry, are you able to?
TG, if you can hear me, would you shake your head yes, please? Okay, so TG is shaking his head yes for the record, and we are now making attempts to call him. And I guess if we put him on speakerphone, would that then convey to our microphone here in the room?
It might be easier if he uses the call-in number for Zoom and call into the meeting so that we can hear him through the audio.
So am I going to give him a phone number to call in?
I believe Ryan has given him the phone number to him.
By what conveyance?
Through the chat and Zoom.
Okay. So, TG, there's a chat feature, and the chat feature is at the bottom of your screen, and we have sent you a phone number to call to join our meeting. Do you see near the left end, about a third of the way in from the bottom left side of your screen, you should see an icon that says chat with a red number, a red call field with a number 2 in it. Do you see that? If so, shake your head yes. Okay, click on that, and you should receive a phone number. Let me make sure that that happens. That's not helpful. I I'm checking the chat feature and I'm not seeing.
Yeah, I think we've messaged it directly to him.
Okay. CT, we have sent you a text message with a phone number in that text message. Have you received the text message itself? If so, shake your head yes, please. No.
It's not a text message, it's a chat message, but I can give him the phone number. Can you write it down, or did you get it out of the chat?
Okay, he's saying, checking his head, yes, he could write it down. Would you please provide him with the phone number?
It is 1-669-444-9171. Again, it is 669-444-9171. The next number is the meeting ID, which is 756-476-2168. Again, that number is 756-476-2168. You'll need the passcode to enter the meeting, and the passcode number is 545-877. Passcode again is 545-877.
We're going to okay. Let's hope that this is happening.
Okay.
Is this something that he would have to respond to by looking at the phone? And I see that he's listening. Is that what he should be doing at this point?
Can you hear me now?
We can. All right. I assume you're able to hear us, and we are getting a whole lot of feedback. So if you could hold your phone kind of away from your mouth a little bit as you speak, we should be able to communicate a little bit better.
He could maybe turn off the speakers on his computer. That's the feedback we're getting.
Can you turn off the speakers on your computer? Please do so. Okay, that's much better.
Okay, you can hear me now?
Excellent. Okay, finally, we have connection. So, TG, please, would you make, you have the opportunity to let the board hear your side of the issue, so you have up to 5 minutes to say whatever you need to say.
Thanks for your patience. I'm not sure why the audio wasn't working. Dr. Finkel was considerably out of line and very unprofessional in his manner. I am a business owner. I have my CDL simply so I can keep track of my drivers myself. I have never been treated so rudely and unprofessionally over a CDL examination. What he stated as far as needing to be able to see my eardrums is completely inaccurate. My hearing is fine, like he stated. I did not throw a fit when he, like he is suggesting that I did. I very simply wanted to know why and where I could find that requirement. And he considered that to be aggressive and said he was going to call the police after I asked him that question. He said that I was wasting much of his time. The first appointment that I had, he was late getting to me. By the time he did get to me, I went through with one of the staff members, which was very professional, the one that gave me the hearing test and several other tests. The gal behind the counter was very unprofessional and and very hard to get along with. In fact, I had to come up to the podium several times to let her know that I was there. As far as the requirement he's stating about having to see my eardrums, nowhere is that found. And I have searched it. I have gone on to federal DOT sites, and that is not a requirement. I am sorry, but that has not been heard of. If it is a requirement, I'd like to have him show me where that is a requirement. My concern with this complaint is simply there's a lot of guys out there, not myself included, that need to get medical exams in order to make a living and a livelihood in this industry. And for him to simply not address those concerns with me and answer those questions was very unprofessional. I did go back the second time after cleaning my ears myself. I did not go to, and I was very clear with him on that, I did not go to a doctor to have my ears cleaned. I simply went home with an ear cleaning kit, which I have never done in my life, and came back on a Monday. I had a Friday first appointment. He denied me because he couldn't see my eardrums. I then came back on Monday, let him know what I was doing. I was literally in his office for about 2 minutes when he said he still couldn't see my eardrums. And I said, I did not understand. My hearing is perfectly fine. I cannot find where this is a requirement you need to hold me to. And I left it at that. And at that point, he got upset and said, I can't, you know, deny him from denying me. And then he did tell me he was going to call the police. And I just looked at him and said, what kind of an operation are you running here? Because I am in no way, shape, or form being aggressive towards you. I would just like the time of day. I just spent a whole weekend rinsing my ears out, and you're not passing somebody that can hear very clearly because you can't see my eardrums. And that is not a criteria which you can disqualify my medical card for. So that's my concern moving forward, is the fact that the unprofessionalism and the fact that there's guys out there trying to make a living and he's running them through the hoops. Every time I had to go, I only went twice. I paid up front in cash. The second time I was required to pay again, he wanted me to go have my ears cleaned by a professional and come back and pay again. And all that bothered me because for one, it's not a legitimate reason. And for two, there's a lot of guys that can't afford to do that. They're already taking time off of their jobs to go to get the medical exam. So that's my concern with him is the runaround that he's given clients. And I'm not the only one here in town, Lake Havasu City. There's several others that I've learned since this complaint was filed. So I would just like to have some, you know, you guys pay attention to that and have it on record for the next time it comes up.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. board members, any questions for TG? Yes, Ms. Powell.
Yes, TG. Why didn't you go to an ENT to have your ears cleared?
I'm sorry.
Why didn't you go to an ENT to have your ears cleared? In other words, a professional. Why didn't you see a professional?
The reason I did not is because I've always subscribed to the theory, don't stick anything bigger than your elbow in your ear. I have never had ear problems. And once I went to clean my ears out for that Saturday and Sunday before return on Monday, my ears have never been as sore as can be. And I followed the instructions on the ear cleaning label. And that is why I didn't go to a professional to do it. I didn't deem it necessary. I didn't want to spend the additional money to do that. And my hearing is just fine.
If I understand it, this test isn't about hearing. You didn't fail because you couldn't hear, but because your ear was occluded, the wax was so thick, and that's part of the test.
That is not part of the criteria he has to work with. He is inaccurate on that. That's something you probably need. You all could probably research and find out. And if you can find anything that says that's a criteria for him to pass or fail a medical CDL, I'd sure like to see it.
Can I rebut?
Any other questions?
Yeah. Thank you.
One moment, Dr. Finkel. Any other questions for Jason? Dr. Finkel, yes, sir.
Clinical Reference Manual, Section 4.1.8, Occlusion of External Canal. It's part of the examination in the ENT examination. It's a requirement. A second thing is the police threat only happened after when he was in the waiting room causing a scene with all my other patients, and I asked him 3 times to please leave. That was never discussed in the examining room. I just advised him I couldn't pass him. And at that point when I couldn't pass him, that's when he made the threat to me and my staff. And that's when I said, you need to leave. Until that point, I was courteous and calm to him. But when he said, I better sign this or else, that's when I said, the exam is over and it's time for you to leave, sir.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Finkel, would you please give me that citing again?
Okay. In the manual that I have, it's the Clinical Reference Manual, Section 4, Subsection 1, Part 8. It's under the ENT examination, and we are supposed to do that. That's the brief part of it. If you look at the actual section, I don't have the exact section of the code. It talks about this. I'm telling you, I've been over this a million times. It's a real point of contention. They were concerned of pressure differences in altitude. They were concerned of the vertigo. They stated there were incidences. It took a lot of argument with the medical review committees to tell them that, you know, this is too common of a problem. We need to find a solution. And fortunately, they did. We can give them 3 months now, and that just happened in January so that they can get there.
Yeah, doctor, I'm aware. That's fine. I appreciate what you're saying, but we're pretty much kind of aware of those points. I just wanted to get the citing. And do you have that citing in front of you?
Well, I'm looking at the reference manual in front of me. Yes, I can take a picture if you want, I guess.
I would like you, if you would, to read the pertinent language of it to us.
Okay. Under the subsection, it says the ears. At this point, external and otoscopic examination should be performed. The doctor should notice evidence of middle ear disease, occlusions of the external canal, or perforations of the eardrum.
Where does it say that that's a non-discretionary disqualifier?
It's part of the ear. Anything with the ear is non-discretionary. Doesn't matter whether it's the hearing. That was what was explained to me by the board themselves. When I would call in, they'd say it's non-discretionary. I asked if I could make. I'm sorry.
You are unable to actually provide in any written document. I understand that there, as you say, as these exams are performed, there's discretionary and non-discretionary. And I understand risk factors associated with pathology that is not hearing related that involves the ear. But I also understand that some of these things are left to the discretion. And so far, I've not heard you. What I think I'm hearing you say is that you don't have any written particular anything in writing that says that it is a non-discretionary disqualifier. That's just something that has been given to you verbally from somebody at the motor safety entity?
That's not correct, sir. No, they actually...
Okay, then I want to get it correct, so please tell me.
I don't have the site in front of me because I'm on the computer with you. I can't pull up that section. And I don't know if that's changed since the January, since they made all those revisions. But at the times when I was talking to them and going through this problem, because it's been a problem in the office more than once, they cited the section to me. They said that it was mandatory. When I talked with David Thorpe on there about the same issues that we're dealing with, he said, unfortunately, it was that way as well, but we were trying to change it. So I have to follow the law and enforce the law until the law gets changed, and that's what I did. And personally, you know, as a doctor with an ear canal that's severely plugged, there is issues with changes in altitude, which can cause issues in driving. I mean, it's not without foundation. It's there. And I don't understand.
No argument there, doctor.
Okay.
No argument there. okay. Board members, any other questions?
I just had to make a comment on a person, relation of my, relative that had problems with ears, but they could hear very clear. And I did a otoscopic exam, and I said, your ears are impacted. You better go get them clean. But I don't have a hearing problem. I go get them clean. And you couldn't even see the ear canal, but they could still hear. You know, the hearing doesn't just come through the ear, it comes through, you know, through
secondary intention.
Yeah, there you go. And anyway, but the thing is that I think the doctor was doing the right thing, that, you know, you need to see the eardrum. That was reluctant, but that doesn't affect hearing. But this person that I a relative who did finally get the urethane, they did say, they did report their hearing was a little better. Mm-hmm. But then I could see the eardrum. Prior to that, it wasn't, couldn't see it.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
What? Doctor, did you mention the name Dave Thorpe?
Yeah, I think I said his name right. He runs the review courses, and he's got quite a bit of, David we're talking about, and he does uh-huh. quite a bit, and they have their board thing too. So it's been something over the years have been discussed. One of the things I'd like the board to understand is that I'm an ENT instructor. You know, I taught in the clinical science division, and that is one of the subjects I taught for a number of years. So ENT is something I know pretty well.
Yeah, that's, yes, thank you, Dr. Finkel. All right, so just to initiate dialogue on this matter and speaking as someone who's qualified as a motor safety ADOT CDL examiner, it is within the scope of a physician who has examined a driver who is either at risk for disqualification or who is disqualified to mandate that they visit some physician to remedy an identified condition. So in my opinion, Dr. Finkel was completely within his authority to have told the patient to go see and get his ears cleaned. The patient did not comply with that instruction. And so to me, that's reasonably clear cut. The second thing I would say is with regard to fees, number one, the board, of course, doesn't get involved with fee disputes, but the other thing is that the paying of a fee for an examination is not contingent upon the examination having been passed. And if a second examination is appropriate to follow up, to confirm or refute compliance, then it is appropriate to charge a fee for that. Service. So with regard to those two issues, those are the statements that I would make. What are your thoughts with regard to all of this?
I lend your expertise and ask someone who is qualified to make that statement. I agree. I don't see any violation here or that the doctor did anything wrong. If anything, he just erred on the side of protecting the patient and the public, really.
Yeah, and I believe
in his best interest.
In my opinion, because when I first reviewed this case, like the patient, I said, I'm not really aware of this as an absolute disqualifier, and I was unable to find that reference. And I was quite happy to learn, as Dr. Finkel pointed out, that we now have discretionary time with the new guideline that's just recently been published. So in that sense, I see that it's a ticklish issue. We really, as a board, are not in a position to deal with human relations issues necessarily here. So other comments?
I don't see anything that substantiates any of the two potential. Just one person's words over another person's words as far as what the front desk said, and I agree with the first part that, you know, expected the patient to go to another provider, and he didn't, and he's not following the guidance, and he has the right to fail that test.
Any other discussion? Then, based upon the fact that there's no other discussion, who would like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion, Chairman, that we dismiss the complaint with no basis to proceed pursuant to ARS 32-924.
Is there a second?
I second that.
Dr. Camacho has seconded that. Is there any discussion of the motion? Hearing none,
I'd like to
vote. You're not allowed to at this point, sir. We are deliberating on a motion. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. By opposed by the same sign. There's none. It's a unanimous vote. This matter will be dismissed, and we will move forward from that. Thank you for your participation, and this matter is closed.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right.
So Dr. Farley got to speak, but I no longer get to speak.
With this matter is concluded, sir. Thank you for your participation. We'll move on to tab number 5. Initial action of case number 2023-029, Dr. Michonne Ouellette. Dr. Ouellette, are you present today? Is Dr. Ouellette present? Is Dr. Ouellette present? Third call out. Okay. Is anyone who is representing Dr. Ouellette by way of legal counsel?
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Is this Dr. Ouellette?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, it is.
Okay. Please identify yourself by your initials. Oh, sorry, Dr. Ouellette, never mind. We can call you by name. Please identify yourself.
I'm Dr. Michonne Ouellette, chiropractor.
Thank you, ma'am. And are you represented by legal counsel today?
No, unfortunately.
Okay. Ms. Vanderveen, may we have a board brief?
The investigation, facts, and allegations are improper billing, failing to create an adequate patient record, making false statements to a patient or third-party payer, and failure to properly supervise.
All right. Thank you. And Dr. Ouellette, the board members have read your response to the complaint. You now have up to 5 minutes to make an opening statement if you would like to make one, would you?
No, it's just this program was under the direction of the nurse practitioner, Samantha Crouch Crowder. I had been employed by that company for 1 month prior to this patient coming in. I have no recollection of the patient. And I guess that's about it.
Okay. And is the patient with the initials, the other patient with initials TG, present?
Yes.
Yes, sir. Okay, TG, we will refer to you by your initials. Would you identify yourself by initials, please?
TG.
Thank you, sir. And do you have any additional information that was not provided in the complaint that you believe the board should know?
Well, what happened is my wife made that appointment for me, and she had cancer. And I went over, and he tested me and showed me a video, and we talked. And the program was something that would be sent to my house, and I would do the program there. And when they brought the paperwork in for me to sign, I told the girl, I can't see that. I got macular degeneration. And they said, it's routine. Just you do it. If the insurance company don't pay, then you got to pay. And then it got down to the money. It was $10,000 for the treatment. And the treatment, I couldn't read any of that paperwork. And it wasn't routine because the first thing on her, I think my wife said, she passed away in November. And she said that there's no refund on your money. And they didn't tell me anything about that other than the insurance. And I ended up signing it. And then my wife seen it about 3 or 4 days later. It was on a desk there at the house. And that's when she said, you've been scammed. And then she done everything. I don't even have any of the paperwork here because I'm back in Ohio and West Virginia right now and getting taken care of everything out here.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Well, he did call me, too. The doctor did call me and asked me if I would call you guys and tell you that he was going to give us our money back. And it took him about 2 weeks, but he finally did give me the money back.
Okay. When you say he, who are you referring to?
To the doctor.
Which doctor is that?
I don't have any of the paperwork. And
okay, and by the way, I'm sorry to hear about your loss, sir. To your recollection, the person you interacted with was a male doctor. That's correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, can you describe for us your interaction with Dr. Ouellette?
In which way?
What experience did you have? In what way did you encounter Dr. Ouellette?
Well, he's the one that talked to me, and he done the tests on my feet and my legs and said I did have neuropathy, and that the program would be really good for me. And then I asked him, I said, what was your worst case scenario? And he said,
sir, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're referring to a person of male, a doctor of male gender, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Right. And yes, ma'am.
I think based on our investigation, and I don't want to speak for the complainant or the patient, are we referring to the clinic director, the clinic director, Damon Downey?
I don't think that he knows. I don't think I think he's just said that he's recalled. But we are entering a potential complaint against Dr. Ouellette, who's a female provider. And so I'm interested in questioning that relationship.
I understand. But I believe based on the records and the information that I believe that is the male that we were referring.
Okay, good. And we may be able to verify that with Dr. Ouellette. All right. One moment. Well, since we're already talking with the patient, do you recall having had any encounter in your relationship with this clinic with any female provider of any kind, a doctor or anybody that worked with you?
Well, the girl that was sitting out at the desk, she came in and brought the paperwork in, and what he said he could give me a discount on that $10,000 if I paid cash. And I said, that's not a problem. And I said, but I didn't bring my checkbook. And he said, well, everybody's got a credit card. And I said, you take credit cards? He said, yeah. And so I give him the card. And,
okay, so thank you. But that was a dialogue that you had with someone else other than a female, correct?
Right. That was the doctor.
So did you have any other dialogue at any time during your experience with this clinic with any other female besides the one who brought in the paperwork?
No. None.
Okay. All right. Any other questions from board members with regard to the patient? All right. And sir, is there anything else that you would like to make us? Yes, Mr. Turbinson.
Yes. I just have one question. So you received a full refund. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that was my only question.
Okay. Patient TG, is there anything else that you already haven't reported to us that we should be aware of?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, the only thing is, you know, I got this macular degeneration, and I can't, even with a magnifying glass or glasses, it just makes it worse. And I could not read anything, and they said that was all just routine stuff. And there wasn't anything on there that was routine. When my wife found it.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. All right. So, Dr. Ouellette, I'd like to give you, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions. The first of which is, I'll start the questioning. What actual encounter did you have with this patient?
To my recollection, none, sir. It has been over a year, so.
All right, and tell me what your role was in this clinic. For how long were you with them to start with?
6 months, and they've since closed.
Okay, and during that 6 months, what was your role there?
I was the chiropractor, so I did examinations, adjustments, treatment plans, x-rays.
Okay, and did you have any interaction with regard to the evaluation of patients presenting for this peripheral neuropathy program?
No. I mean, I was trained in it, but no, I never did anything with it.
Okay. Board members, other questions for Dr. Ouellette? Do you, Dr. Ouellette?
Yes, sir.
Who was the person who was having, are you familiar with the with what the patient has described in terms of a consultation relative to the peripheral neuropathy program?
Yes, I believe you guys, you are correct. I don't know who said that, that it is, was Damon Downing.
So to your knowledge, the gentleman that the patient met with and who negotiated the contract and who issued the refund was Mr. Downing?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Okay. And you're saying that you had no interaction with this patient whatsoever?
That's correct, to my knowledge, yes.
Okay. Board members, any questions?
My recollection.
Yes. Doctor, you're an employee of the clinic or you own the clinic?
I was an employee.
An employee? Who owns the clinic?
I'm sorry, who owns it? Damon Downing and Alan Laws, I believe was his name. L-A-W-E-S.
One of them is a chiropractor?
No, ma'am.
Or no?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I question for board staff. I was kind of under the impression that there was a greater connection between this patient encounter and the Dr. Ouellette. Do we have any actual documentation of any document that was filled out by Dr. Ouellette in the process? I do not see any.
I believe that was one of staff's questions.
And it wasn't really answered.
And it wasn't answered in the response.
To Dr. Ouellette?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think it was unclear to board staff that she was not an owner of this clinic.
Okay.
I did not reside over that clinic. There was a nurse practitioner that was directing that program. And I believe I put that in the initial statement that I replied to, yeah.
So did you have any role, I think I may have asked this already, but I want to just verify for the record. Did you have any role in this program of presenting peripheral neuropathy treatment plans to patients and within the auspices of this clinic?
No, sir.
Okay. Did you, as a chiropractic provider, did you participate in the chiropractic care for a patient who had been diagnosed and was being treated for peripheral neuropathy?
Yes.
Okay. Please describe that, what you just said. What kind of relationship did you have?
Some of them would get adjusted, and then some would be giving, would be doing exercises in the clinic, including vibration therapy, which helps with the neuropathy.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And we've already determined from the patient that none of this was done at home. Unfortunately, or whatever, the documentation that we have, the alarming documentation that we have, is very exorbitant fees for things that can be bought in the retail marketplace for a small fraction of their cost. We have things such as, the statements that insurance, written statements that insurance, payments were an estimate when in fact it is very highly unlikely that in any insurance coverage would ever exist for any of these marginal or experimental protocols. But none of this that I can see relates back to Dr. Ouellette. So given that conundrum, are there any, Mr. Turbinson, Ms. Powell, Dr. Camacho, do you have any other questions?
I just want to ask, Dr. Ouellette, you mentioned that this clinic has already closed, not even in existence anymore.
It was a little unclear, but I believe you're asking me if the clinic exists anymore, and no, it does not.
Okay. Thank you.
I guess I would ask Dr. Ouellette, were you aware of some of the things that I just mentioned with regard to the apparent lack of efficacy of the protocols that were being provided to these patients, especially on a home self-supervised basis, and the costs connected with them, and the potential misrepresentation of potential of any insurance coverage. Were you aware of any of that?
I was not aware of any misrepresentation of insurance coverage. I believe their logic was that if they pursued some chiropractic care or examination, some of that might be recouped by insurance. But as for the efficacy, the only knowledge I have of that is I asked every single patient that was going through it if they were getting results. And I mean, I don't know how many patients that was that I was able to ask, maybe a handful. And, you know, only one was not getting results. The rest were very happy.
All right. So from your clinical experience, you felt that you were at least seeing some level of benefit. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Any other questions?
No questions.
All right. Let's have some discussion here. I see some things that are really alarming, but I can't see any clear connection between them and Dr. Ouellette. Does anybody not agree with that?
No, I agree. Even though her name is mentioned in the complaint, I really don't see her having anything to do with
it.
Yeah, that's a good question. TG, how did you end up, or you or your wife end up filing a complaint on Dr. Ouellette and not on the gentleman that you spoke with at the clinic?
Well, that's who we filed the claim on, the person that was there.
No.
The one that checked me out and said that I definitely had neuropathy, and he would send that stuff in. I think it said Texas, and then they would decide on what kind of equipment I needed. It would be shipped there.
Yes, sir.
I could ship it there, or they'd ship it to my house. I said, ship it here.
Yeah, so, sir, what I'm asking you, you've said multiple times that your person that you spoke to at the clinic, who you say now is the person that you filed a complaint on, was a male. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, Dr. Ouellette is a female.
I know.
And so, okay, so how and for what reason did you file a complaint on Dr. Ouellette?
I had to bring my wife back to Ohio from Arizona, because I checked the airlines. They wanted about $10,000 to ship her back if she died out there. So I brought her back here. She passed away back here. And all my paperwork is in Arizona. But I never talked to any female doctor. There was a young woman working the desk out front, but there was no female doctor in there. It was a male doctor.
Okay, thank you. And board staff, who generated this report, this complaint?
The complaint was put in by his deceased wife.
Okay, so the complaint was actually created by his deceased spouse. Okay.
Yes.
So I would entertain a motion to dismiss.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to dismiss, having no basis, no foundation.
Okay, it's been moved to dismiss. Is there a second from Dr. Camacho?
Yes.
Is there any further discussion of the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, opposed by the same sign. Hearing none, 4-0 with one recusal. The motion to dismiss is passed. Dr. Ouellette, you're free to go. Thank you, TG, for your participation. This matter at this point is concluded.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for what you guys do. You do a good job.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate that very much. Next on the agenda, and welcome back, Dr. Lee, is item F tab number 6, the applications from licensure for Dr. Ronald Vaughn. Dr. Vaughn, you are present today, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Please come forward and introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you for hearing me. My name is Dr. Ronald Vaughn.
And are you represented by legal counsel?
I am not.
Thank you. Ms. Penderby, may we have a board report?
I will defer to Mr. Dominic.
Dr. Bond submitted an application for licensure by endorsement, but then changed to by universal recognition. Did answer yes to question number 4, which was, has any formal sanction ever been taken against your license? Or have you ever surrendered a license? He also answered yes to question number 7, which asked if they have ever been arrested, convicted of offense, misdemeanor, or felony. On looking into it, Dr. Vaughn had 2 disciplinary actions taken against his license in Illinois. First one was 2006, which states under the stipulations portion, information has come to the attention of the department that respondent has failed to meet the continuing medical education requirements for renewal of medical license, and that respondent cannot provide proof of completion of the required CME. Under the conditions, so that he was reprimanded, and he furnished the department with proof of completion of hours of CME for license renewal, even though it was completed after July 31st of 2005. He had to pay a fine of $1,500. The second disciplinary action was based off the Department of Financial and Professional Regulation for the state of Illinois. There was unpaid tax liability, so that they suspended his license until that matter was taken care of, and he was back on active. He was put back to active status. And he answered yes to being arrested for a misdemeanor or felony, but in this written statement, it had to do with an issue with his divorce, and that there were no records. There were no records found in the only record that Cook County Sheriff's Department was able to provide was just a record of when he was arrested and when he was released. There was no other documentation that they were able to provide. And the recommendation would be to grant license.
Thank you. And Dr. Vaughn, the board members have reviewed your application and the letters of recommendation that were submitted on your behalf. If you care to, you have up to 5 minutes to make a statement.
Well, I don't want to talk anybody out of voting yes for me. So I would say if anyone has any questions for me regarding what he just said, I'd be happy to answer them. I think it was pretty clear in the letter of explanation that I provided.
Okay. Any questions from any board members?
Did it take, Doctor, a year to reinstate your license?
Yeah. No, it did not take a year. The as I said in the in my statement, I inherited the debt from the divorce. In among that debt was Illinois state tax bill, and I was advised by my accountant that I would, in the repayment of the debt, had to follow a very specific plan. Among which the order of importance was spousal support and child support, number one, because you could be arrested and jailed for that. So that took priority, and then, you know, credit card bills could be negotiated and tax bills could be negotiated, and that was in the process of happening. But I did not receive any information from the state that my license was to be suspended if I didn't pay the tax bill. I actually found out about it accidentally. As I recall, I was trying to, I used to sell nutritional supplements in my office. I think it was Orthomolecular in Wisconsin when I applied to purchase supplements from them, said we can only supply supplements to licensed practitioners. And I didn't understand what they were talking about. So they found out that my license was suspended. That's how I found out about it. And I contacted the board and they said, oh, yeah, it's suspended. You have to pay your taxes. I'm like, well, how do I do that? So they told me I paid the taxes and they reinstated it immediately. So I didn't think it was much of a punishment to not tell the person that they were being punished. But that was that one.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Mr. 1 second. Mr. Turpinson, you had initiated a question before Ms. Powell, right during Ms. Powell.
Yeah, just a few questions. With regard to the contempt, were you represented by an attorney in those proceedings?
I was not.
You were not, okay. And have you received anything since, I know you requested the records, have you received any records regarding that since?
There was no court reporter in the divorce case, so there were no records on it.
Okay, those are the only questions I had.
Thank you, Mr. Trevinson. Dr. Camacho.
No, I was curious, you paid to pay taxes, was it income tax or the sales tax?
Income tax.
Any other questions? There being none, would someone like to make a motion?
I have a motion we give the standard license.
So you're moving that we grant licensure upon payment of all appropriate fees and
definitely. Most of the stuff is over, 10 years old?
Is there a second?
I second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, we will vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, and those opposed, hearing none, vote unanimous to grant licensure. Welcome to practice in the state of Arizona.
Thank you. Herb, thank you very much.
I hope you have another 30 years of
yes, practice. Thank you so much.
Okay, next on the agenda is item H, tab number 8, the Executive Director's Report.
In your board materials, I have provided you with the latest cash flow report. In regards to Cynthia, probably the only update I have is the bullet steps update change to update everyone's licenses to 2025 ran last night. So everybody's licenses that have renewed currently now reflect 2025 as their expiration date. So in regards to my other report out, in terms of pending complaints, I provided you with the slide deck in your materials. Regarding complaints, I broke them out for you by priority. As you can see, we are have just two remaining from 2020, two remaining from 21, five from 2022, 31 from 2023, and 2024, we are up to 43 complaints that we've received. In terms of complaints at or pending initial action, we have a total of 83 open cases right now. In terms of cases that are awaiting initial action, that number's down. It's really just those cases from 2023 and 2024. Everything that's historic has been before you, and if these are staying continued or pending a formal interview or formal hearing.
Ms. Vanderveen, I have a question with regard to the pending complaints by fiscal year and priority. Mm-hmm. I see that you have prioritized them with red being the highest priority.
Mm-hmm.
For the record, those are identify what parameters of red cases. Mm-hmm.
Red, it usually involves either patient injury, sexual misconduct, malpractice, anything that falls into those category are considered red cases. Medium cases are blue and they're considered documentation billing. And then low priority cases are items that don't kind of fall into that medium category and maybe there's not enough information for us to totally call out what they are.
And if I'm looking at the graph, for the record, anything there are prior to 2022, there is only one red case that's outstanding. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And in 2022, there are two. So prior to 2023, there are three outstanding mm-hmm. red cases. Is
that's
that
correct?
Correct?
And if you'll look, as you can see on the next graph, you can see cases that have not been before you, like 18 and 19 were at zero. What I consider not having been presented, the first step in the process is obviously the board staff investigates. The next step is the initial action. Mm-hmm. So these would be cases that have not come before you for initial action.
So there's two in 2020 and two in 2021.
Yes.
Okay. And
that's two cases. They are still held at initial action. They have been before you, but they have been continued or stayed. So they are just kind of in that pending category. They're pending at initial action.
And for the record, those cases that are pending or stayed, what would be an example of why they're being pended or stayed?
There could be other legal actions that the board is waiting for, or we've requested additional information as it relates to the investigation, and the investigation is ongoing.
Okay, and so we would investigate or request information from other law enforcement agencies or judiciary bodies or what have you.
Correct. One of these cases is Dr. Watson, who was here before you today, that we were asking for that additional information for the subpoena. Mm-hmm. So that is a case that has been before you for initial action that we requested additional information, and we are in the process of collecting.
Okay, we're trying to wrap that up. Mm-hmm. Good. All right. And then 2022, there are five?
Mm-hmm.
Good. And because I'm Ms. Powell and I are the ones who are privy to the state of these things in prior years, I want to say well done on getting this organized and making progress.
I second that motion.
For the record, Dr. Camacho has excused himself temporarily from the meeting.
So slide number four is cases by fiscal year that are pending either a formal interview, formal hearing, are stayed or continued. So as you can see, we have five cases that are pending a formal hearing. We have no cases pending a formal interview, and we have five that are continued and three that are stayed.
Okay.
And then slide number five is total open to total closed cases. So in terms of the overall perspective, since March of 2022, 74% of all complaints have been investigated and adjudicated that we've received and had to address dating back to 2 years ago. So the red cases are the ones that are closed, and then the green are the remaining ones open, and then the blue is the total overall. Cases. And as you can see, for 2024, we are trending very well toward where we were in 2018, if not to exceed that, in terms of the number of cases. Total number of cases over 180 days. We have 39 that are hovering over that. So always trying to work to get those addressed, but obviously we do still have limited resources and a limited kind of ability to hear cases. I think we could prep and prepare everything for you, and there's only so much information you can process in that time frame. And then total cases closed by priority. I just kind of wanted to point out these are cases that have been on the agenda, total number of cases on the agenda, and your close rate for cases overall. And so overall, we have almost a 56% close rate for every matter that comes before you. So at a single meeting, you're addressing about 56%.
And this is a parameter that many regulatory boards are judged by, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us an idea of where we are compared to other boards? Is that information that's generally
I don't have that information at hand. I could probably look into that, but I was just kind of tracking our numbers to see where we were at in terms of overall what happens at a board meeting. And so, like I said, so 50% of all cases are addressed during potentially initial action.
And is that good? Is that a good group? Okay.
Slide number eight is licenses issued. We've received 73 applications, and so far this year we've issued 36. So I know we
want to
talk about renewals.
So I'm sorry. We're more than half of the in in beginning of March, we are already more than half of the total of all last year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're seeing a large number of new applications.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting, because that has hung at a fairly static level, but yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we saw an uptick last year too. But two, we're kind of falling into that, like, everyone who graduated and tested in December and January is mm-hmm. starting to put their applications in. So we're starting to see that big uptake. It gets really quiet at the end of the year, and then we kind of have that big uptake as everyone starts to graduate. So we'll see how that comes out. So total renewal applications, I provided these to you by incomplete, by received by month. So obviously, as always, most applications come in December. Had quite a few for November, but, and then we still have several, I think we're at 187 total incomplete applications. So if you know anybody whose date has not updated from 2023, their application has been incomplete. Staff has been communicating multiple times. We've provided messages in the portals. We've provided emails. We were providing phone calls.
What's the problem?
It's the extension fee. I would say 75% of them are the extension fee. And so once they hit the 60-day notice mark, so we notice them, they have 60 days to secure their application. Once they surpass that 60 days, they will be issued an admin suspension letter, and their status will be moved to admin, administratively suspended until they pay that extension fee and cure that. So I would encourage, if you're getting those questions, to tell them to check the message portion of their portal. They have multiple messages, but I can also tell you, because a lot of them come to me, is that they're like, well, what are you talking about? I paid my fee. And we're like, you have a, and I think we've invoiced everyone in the portal. All they have to do is go in and pay their invoice in the portal. Super simple. So we're just continuing to monitor that and work through that. Renewals by approval date, obviously, same trend as usual. The majority of them were approved in January. The average number of days for approval is 17, which I would say was an improvement from past years, but I would also state that includes the time frame it takes you to cure that application, right? So those, like, we've maybe processed it, but we can't approve it and mark it as approved in the system until you rectify that incomplete. So the average still comes out to 17. I think we're actually faster than that in terms of touching them and marking them and the modification of that. Total renewals received, we received 2,202. But I will say, when I was doing my research last night, there's about 81 what we would call new applications in the portal. So somebody who started an application in the portal and has not completed it and submitted it. So there's about another 81 applications out there that we're still waiting to come in. Licensing statuses, 87% of all licensees are active. We have 2,158 active licenses, 100 on admin suspension, 65 are lapsed, and then retired and inactive are about 7% overall. Continuing education applications, so far this year we've received 178, and this number does not include the association's application packet. So that's in addition to this. All PACE pre-check applications have been processed, and I will have to tell you, we received it in a matter of about a 2 month period of time. We received two very large packages from Parker, and then all of Palmer's online continuing education, all within the same kind of time frame. So in terms of the pending, we have 41 applications that are pending, and they are the longer, more detailed applications. They're not the PACE pre-check. All PACE pre-checks are really complete. That is the majority of my report. Do you have any questions for me?
When you do the CE application approvals, are you following a checklist to get through it?
So we have two. We have a pre-check that for the pre-check and the PACE are the same because it's really the same information.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a secondary review that we do on the longer applications. And I will tell you the biggest hurdle we are running into is the quality of the application. And
yeah.
We went to a new application and we added to the application a space for course objectives, subject matter, all of that, and that gets left blank or they say see attached. And then we spend significant time digging through trying to find that information from the syllabus packet.
When they're completing the syllabus, they go to the form to complete the form, select the form, complete it. Do you have in the instructions in bold letters or in some way that they would recognize, do not leave anything blank or don't fail?
We've gone to the point where we no longer maintain the application. If it's deemed incomplete for those types of errors, we give them the entire application packet back and tell them they have to resubmit. They have 10 days to do so or they'll have to resubmit another fee.
Good.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
What makes, for example, Parker seminars. My son took the Parker seminar, and there were certain courses that were accepted and certain courses that weren't accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And the makes it, for me, kind of confusing is that, and puzzling, is that some of these courses are chiropractic courses, like if for some reason weren't accepted. I think it was back in October, November. I came up to the peak here. They had a seminar on natural means of chiropractic was in there too. And I already had my hours, so I didn't, but I wanted to go there because there was a few friends I hadn't seen in a while and were going to be there. They came all the way from the East Coast and I happened to be there. And I sat in some of these courses. And the thing was that class, whatever was taught there, because I didn't see sit in much of them because I didn't have to take them. But I did sit in a few of them on natural, developing natural immunities using certain products, stuff like that, nutritional.
Mm-hmm.
But that was easily accepted by the board as a 4 hours, continuing education hours. But yet some of these other ones, that, like Parker, for example, which contains so-called chiropractic courses, why weren't those accepted? No, what makes an acceptance?
So there's a list.
What is the
I would refer you to the board rule regarding continuing education.
Mm-hmm.
And the approved subject courses are in J, and the courses that do not qualify are L.
A lot of Parkers, just FYI, because I've been there, done that for 40 years.
Yeah.
A lot of the Parker courses are more motivational,
right,
practice building,
mm-hmm.
and that's why they don't qualify.
Right. No, I know that. But I mean, I've taken courses in Parker where number one, they say these courses are certified by the state of Arizona,
mm-hmm.
only to find out that the state of Arizona did not accept them. And they were chiropractic courses.
I would tell you that from our review, any courses that are not approved do not meet the subject matter requirement under J.
Okay, so if Parker says these courses are accepted, in reality they may not be accepted.
They don't meet the requirement.
And now is there like a gray area? Is there like a fine line? And then it's in here, which one?
The rule is...
Parker does also have a habit of saying courses are approved for continuing education,
not specifically
by Arizona, but
yeah,
it could be in a number of different
It's R47801, and some jurisdictions accept all PACE courses. We don't accept all PACE pre-check courses.
Right.
So
okay.
They have to meet the subject matter requirements for Arizona in order to qualify for continuing education.
Yeah.
And so it's Article 8 of the rules that starts on page 39. But the subject matters are on page 47, 48, and then L, which are the non-qualifying topics are in 49 and 50.
Okay. And Dr. Camacho, you may recall from our meeting in December that we basically agreed that at some point when we have the resources available to us, and our staff are not being overwhelmed by other pressing issues, that we wanted to revisit that section of rules in particular, right, with the idea of condensing it and seeking clarity internally, because it has been kind of an ongoing issue. And in the past, without casting aspersions, the former members of the Arizona board have been, and staff have addressed this issue in a more casual way. And with new board members and new staff members, it's clear that the language says what it says. And so we have now been enforcing that language. The rules haven't changed, but the enforcement of it has.
Right,
and
right.
So that's been part of the consternation that we've dealt with. Any other questions? Do you want to go over the FCLB conference agenda?
Yes. I have taken the liberty to register you all to attend the FCLB annual conference. I have included in your materials the agenda. You are all enrolled on Wednesday, May 1st, for the board member training, which is from 1 to 5. So this will count as part of your hours for your board member training that's needed as part of your onboarding. The conference starts on Thursday, so you'll have that first day on Wednesday in the afternoon. Then Thursday, the conference starts. I've enrolled some of you in the new attendee breakfast and some of us alumni in the regular breakfast.
There's no difference in the food. In fact, they may feed the new
you
attendees
might get
better.
Breakfast,
yeah.
We might just get high. And so then the majority of the first day will be all FCLB items. You do not need to attend the FCLB workshop, but I would encourage you to understand some of the resources that we access and utilize, like PACE or SINBAD, EA courses, those types of things. So it's kind of helpful. A resource that we use. On Friday, staff and I will be attending the CBAC or the administrators portion, and you will be all attending the national board meeting and luncheon. Stacy is signed up to participate in the legal advisors committee meeting on that day. And then Saturday will be the business meeting and the attorney panel, which is always interesting. The board will enjoy this. They are providing some informational in relation to the PBI education courses that we've started to utilize, kind of some behind the scenes for that. And so I thought the board would find that very relevant. And then you will be all done Saturday afternoon.
There is have the other board members have the opportunity to sign up for the social event?
Oh, I didn't. We do need to talk about guests and the social events. Thank you for reminding me. The board is covering your registration. However, the board cannot cover your spouse as your guest or any meals or anything like that related to them. There is a social event Friday night. It is a baseball game at CBAC Stadium.
Dodgers.
Tickets are $100. So if you and your spouse would like to go, you'll let me know. I can let FPLB know and they will invoice you those for those tickets.
Okay. Does that conclude your executive director's report?
That's it. If you have no questions for me, that concludes my report.
Okay. And are we going to get a report from our investigators with regard to anything? We have other.
Yeah, the reports are provided. There's just since the last board meeting, one doctor that you had offered a consent agreement for has signed and agreed to that consent agreement.
We've released one for information.
I love your reports, Ryan. To the fourth, short. Any questions for our investigator? All right. Then I believe that concludes our agenda in general. Next on the agenda is item I, a call to the public. You have up to 2 minutes to make a statement on the record. This is not meant to be a two-way dialogue. The board may not discuss or take actions on matters raised during the call to the public that are not specifically identified on the agenda, but may respond to criticism, ask staff to review a matter, or ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. The board may impose on speakers reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions. Speakers are cautioned to refrain from discussing any confidential information, and in the event that such dialogue should occur, the dialogue will be terminated. We only have one person in our live audience, nothing to say. All right, thank you. Then with regard to our Zoom attendees, is there anyone attending via Zoom who would wish to raise a hand and speak at the call to the public?
Yes. I've raised my
hand. All right, I see LV. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Good afternoon, board members and staff. Thank you again for allowing me to speak as a call from the public. This will be a repeat call from myself concerning three complainants that have not been brought up for almost 600 days. All three complainants feel that the board is being biased and ignoring our complaints that were submitted about a chiropractor's sexual misconduct with patients. After testifying at the committee meeting SB 1233 against the Board of Chiropractic Examiners for their neglect, the two other complainants and myself fear that the chiropractic board's bias and continued unfair treatment will get worse as a result for testifying against the chiropractic board. I am asking for the fourth time, when will the board be addressing these complaints regarding sexual misconduct, and will the board rule on this fairly?
Thank you for your comments.
I'm not
as
finished.
Dr. Bennett, I'm not finished.
I have one more sentence. I'm sorry. I have one more. When is an emergency agenda warranted? And I need to notate that this is a very serious situation. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. We have addressed this matter with you multiple times, and we will, in accordance with the powers permitted to us during the call to the public ruling regulations, be referring this matter to staff. I assure the entire public who are listening to this that this board has, in fact, been dealing with this issue on a priority basis for quite some time. The delays that we are experiencing have nothing to do with this board's actions, but rather delays brought forward to the board by participants in the charge who have a vested interest in slowing the process down. That said, are there any other members of the public who would like to raise a hand and make a comment in the call to the public opportunity?
Yes, I would. Dr. Bennett. My name is Chris Goodman. And full disclosure, I am an attorney, but I'm also here as a member of the public, and I do in the civil action between her and her former business partner.
If you would refrain from mentioning names or initials.
Certainly. Yes, certainly I will, and I understand that. I do want to commend the board members for taking on the role on the board, which is, I imagine, is a very thankless role, and a difficult role, particularly with regard to self-regulation and regulating your colleagues. I appreciate the opportunity that you gave to speak yet again. I'm well aware of Ms. Persistence. But I do echo her comments, and I appreciate the board's brief response there. I know that you cannot get into detail as to what exactly is occurring. But again, I do encourage the board to act on this as quickly as possible. I understand that, you know, the existing civil litigation has been apparently a complicating factor, but, you know, I do encourage the board to address this complaint and the complaints of, other two complainants as quickly as possible and, you know, either, do whatever the board needs to do in order to adjudicate them, regardless of the outcome. We just ask that they be adjudicated. Thank you.
Thank you for your words of encouragement. Any other people, participants who would like to raise a hand and make a comment relative to the calls of the public? Again, a second call. Anyone wishing to make a comment relative to the call to the public? Third offering? Seeing none, I see no further hands raised on Zoom. And so the call to the public is finished. The time at this point is 12:31, and this meeting is adjourned. Thanks, guys.